Honduran Deputy Minister for Natural Resources and the Environment, and suspected of being involved in the murder of environmentalist Berta Cáceres, has been arrested, but was later released after posting a bond and agreeing to appear before the court periodically. Cardona is accused of being one of the high-ranking officials who illegally advanced the Agua Zarca hydroelectric dam project opposed by the Lenca community and by environmentalists. In 2013, a former official authorized an increase in the generating potential of the proposed dam from 16 megawatts to over 21 megawatts, while also declaring the dam to be environmentally sustainable. The Lenca indigenous people were not consulted over the dam project as required by law. The reservoir would have flooded a massive region of native lands and cut off water supplies. The Civic Council of Popular and Indigenous Organization of Honduras believes Berta Cáceres was killed due to her efforts to stop the construction of the dam. The group claims that the Honduran company behind the project, Desarrollos Energéticos, and the Honduran government hired contract killers to murder activists like Berta.
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Is this you discussing Indian blood? We're going to judge people by whether they have Indian blood, whether they're qualified to run a gaming casino or not?
That probably is me, absolutely. Because I tell you what, if you look at some of the reservations that you've approved, you, sir, in your great wisdom have approved, I will tell you right now, they don't look like Indians to me, and they don't look like the Indians. Now, maybe we say politically correct or not politically correct. They don't look like Indians to me, and they don't look like Indians to Indians. And a lot of people are laughing at it, and you're telling how tough it is, how rough it is to get approved. Well, you go up to Connecticut, and you look. Now, they don't look like Indians to me, sir.
Thank God that's not the test of whether or not people have rights in this country or not, whether or not they pass your look test.
Depends whether or not you're approving it, sir.
No, it's not a question whether I'm approving it.
Mr. Trump, you know in the history of this country where we've heard this discussion before, they don't look Jewish to me.
Oh, really?
They don't look Indian to me. They don't look Italian to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a test for whether people could go into business or not go into business, whether they could get a bank loan. You're too black. You're not black enough.
I want to find out.
Why are you
approving for Indian? Why don't you approve it for everybody then? If your case is non-discriminatory, why don't you approve for everybody? You're saying only Indians can have the reservations. Only Indians can have the gaming. So why aren't you approving it for everybody? Why are you being discriminatory? Why is it that the Indians don't pay tax, but everybody else does? I do.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know.
Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligence Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man come in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet Radio for Smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
If you look at the rhetoric, Bill Ayers represents, I would call it the spirit of 1968. And this was the radical spirit that saw America as a force for evil, saw Vietnam as a metaphor for how bad America was, and then went right back into American history and reinterpreted American history as a series of crimes visited upon different, the Native Americans, the African Americans, the Mexicans. So this became a kind of anti-Americanism that was fostered in America, and it became pervasive in our schools, our colleges, it's now part of the media.
Do you admit
so our culture
that?
Has been shaped by this.
You don't admit that?
No, I think it's interesting. First of all, both of you are acting like the ends justify the means is absolutely from Mars, but when your ends are in question, like invading Iraq, you're all for it. You're all in, and that's the ends justify. That's a violent end. But on this question of the spirit of 68, we went back and reinterpreted history, and you act as if the reinterpretation of history was some kind of fiction. We did commit genocide against the Native Americans.
Actually,
we did enslave people for 250 years. And the question, could you be a moral person and own slaves, I think is something that you dodge. And so what I would say is you need to look at the thing honestly and don't be so afraid of the fact that we did terrible, terrible things in our history. And in order to get right with the world, we have to repair those injuries.
But we shouldn't flagellate ourselves for things that we didn't do. Let's look at genocide. The American Indian population shrunk by 80% over 150 years. The main reason for that was not because of warfare or systematic killing. It's because the white man brought with him from Europe diseases to which the Native Americans, did not have any immunities. And so they perished in large numbers. Now, the Europeans, one-third of the population of Europe 100 years later had been wiped out by the Black Plague. Where did that come from? Asia. So with the migration of peoples, diseases go from civilization to civilization. That's not genocide. Genocide is when you intend to wipe out people.
They intended to wipe out the people and steal their land, and they did both.
Do you think there's a reflexive instinct on many on the left, or to the left of the left, as I guess you are, to blame America first?
Internet radio for smart aboriginal.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, Salaton and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. You have tuned into Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under colonial, imperial, theological, racialist, homophobic, misogynist, neoclassist, neoliberal, neoliteral, neo-fascist, and those communities suffering from pro-capitalist, anti-environmental oppression. I'm your host, Angry Indian, Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the people of the Fourth World from AboriginalNewsWire.tumblr.com and AboriginalPress.wordpress.com, as well as our main news portal, ang-newswire.blogspot.com. running along with my executive co-producer and master studio engineer, Ms. Guadalupe Morales. We welcome you back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the official broadcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, coming straight at you from Everyman Studios in Multnomah Nation Territory. Sorry, I'm trying to adjust myself in the new chair here that we have, or whoever bought it for this cooperative here. Hey, yeah, we're back. I mean, what is there to talk about? No, I don't know what to say. The racism in Portland is becoming very, very fucking evident. What is there to talk about? We can talk about Trump, but, you know, I mean, what is there to say? You know, we already know what the fuck is going on. I mean, yeah, we've always known what the fuck is going on. It's not about Trump's politics because he has none. You know, he's been a Democrat, he's been a Republican, he's been a Democrat, he's been a Republican. You know, I mean, he's bounced back and forth between the limited, you know, fucking menu here for politics. As it suits him. You know, he hates Native fucking Americans. You know, he's the arbiter on, you know, who's Indian and who isn't, right? And even then, we can talk about what the fuck Indian means. We can talk about what Indio means. You know, we can talk about black goddamn Indians, because nobody fucking talks about black Indians, right? Because especially when you talk about what he was bitching about at the time, you know, I want to say Foxwoods. Was it Foxwoods, Luke? It was Foxwoods, right? Where he was, because we got audio somewhere. It was at some fucking hearing. And he was talking about, yeah, well, you know, they don't look like Indians to me. And I don't think this fellow was Native. Whoever was on the, the big man was behind the microphone. He was like, yeah, you know, what kind of a country would we have if we had to rely on Donald Trump to decide who the fuck is what, you know, ethnicity? Now, you know, we all know that Donald Trump is a fucking, you know, fop, right? He's a mope. You know, as my cousin would say, he was a mook. You know, he's a jerk, a fucking fanook. You know, I mean, all of the fucking, you know, insults that I can think of that I know from Philly. You know, it's like he's a jerk. You know, he's Archie Bunker without any sort of motherfucking decorum whatsoever. And Archie Bunker was rude. But see, what's worse about Trump is he's got money and he's rude. He came from money and he's rude. You know, and I've known people, you know, white folks, because remember, I'm an Uncle Tom, right? You know, I've never lied about that on this show. You know, I'm one of those mixed race Uncle motherfucking Toms, right? Well, see, it's the Uncle Toms like me, you know, who are much more fucking a threat to the system. You know, why is that? Because we ask me to understand how the fuck white people think. You know, I mean, you might work with them, you might drink with them, you might even fuck them every little once in a while. You know, but when you start getting invited to the baby christenings, when you start getting invited to when, you know, people passing away and they want to say goodbye to everybody and they request that you be there. You know, I mean, really, listen to what the fuck I'm saying to you. Then you can talk shit about white folks. When you're sitting there with their daughter and, you know, some black folks are in the news and it's rarely good news, because we're talking about mainstream news. You know, not the news that you and I pay attention to. You know, not Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, right? You know, not Truthout or something like that. Counterpunch, I don't know. I'm not really clear on what the fuck Counterpunch is doing these days. But you dig what I'm saying? When you're sitting there with them and you're watching some shit like, you know, whatever the fuck is going down in Chicago, because there's always bad news coming out of Chicago. And they're candid. I mean candid. When they say shit like, well, you know, these niggas are going crazy, but, you know, Abby, we're not talking about you. Right? You know what I mean? I mean, Luke, you get it, right? With your husband's family, right? You know, we're not talking about, you know, we're talking about Mexicans, not you, right? You know, it's always that way. And, you know, yeah, you know, we're not going to be in here too long, man. But, you know, I just wanted to say there's a couple of things that's really bugging me about what, you know, what's happening with the political front. Now, you got what the fuck I'm talking about right here, where, you know, you got a lot of fucking shit happening where Trump is basically, you know, the one, I guess, if, you know, the one good thing, if you want to give him any goddamn thing, he's exposed the United States for exactly what the fuck it is. So, you know, the mythology is over. You know, the word is out that, you know, fairness and all that kind of, you know, bullshit. It's just that. It's bullshit. It's a myth. It doesn't have anything to do with reality. It doesn't have anything to do with how things really function. This is the real politic. This is the Henry Kissinger real politic. Like I said, Henry Kissinger is a motherfucker, but read his books. See, that's the shit that gets me about the left. Well, the left today, because it wasn't the left that I was a part of when I was a young man in my formative years, where you were, you were expected to read everything. I read Ayn Rand, not because of a capitalist thing, not because some conservative pushed me to Ayn Rand. It was a socialist that told me to, matter of fact, he was a hardcore communist at the time in the early 80s who asked me to read Ayn Rand because I didn't know when he was making these arguments and I had asked him who the fuck Ayn Rand was and we were walking and when we passed by his apartment, he asked me to wait. He went upstairs and came back down with a copy of The Fountainhead. That's how I found out about Ayn Rand. You know, because he's like, you know, how the fuck can we beat them if we don't understand what the fuck is going on? If we don't know what kind of a system they're running. We don't understand the mentality of the people in which we're dealing with. Okay. So, you know, Ralph Shulman. Some of you might have heard of him. Some of you may not have heard of him. I mean, he's come to Philadelphia a couple of times. And I remember being at tutorials with him and a lot of old time commies, you know, and I'm sure the Bureau was sitting there and whoever the fuck else, you know, but you know, the bottom line was the education we got was to study everything, make no assumptions, study everything, understand how the system works. It's one thing to say that capitalism is fucked up. It's another thing to be able to define capitalism. See, if you ask a lot of these motherfucking Trump supporters to actually define what it is that they are fucking against, they can't do it. He can't do it. I mean, for the most part, Hillary Clinton can't do it either. And, you know, and that's one thing I suppose I want to talk about briefly here, Lou, before we do whatever. You know, those of you who are surprised on the left about the WikiLeaks revelations, well, a couple of them I'm not even really sure about, to be honest with you. And the majority of them, I mean, what the fuck are you surprised about? You knew that she was a neoliberal before she went into this, before these goddamn things were leaked. Why are you surprised? Why are you feigning surprise? Why are you joining the far right, the alt-right now, if you want to, you know, give these neo-Nazi hipsters, otherwise known as hipsters in Europe, but if you want to give these, you know, these fucking hipsters some fucking, some play, you know, since you're going to go out of your way to motherfucking acknowledge these goddamn bastards, okay, fine, do that. But, you know, these emails aren't surprising any goddamn buddy. You know, you can go back into the motherfucking archives, whether it's this show, right, or the appearances I've made on Bob Kincaid's show. However the fuck you want to do it. You know, I was on the Kincaid show damn near every time I was on the Kincaid show before we started having, you know, a discrepancy, you know, basically. And I'm not talking about Bob as a person because, you know, he's not the issue. You know, the issue is, I mean, he as an individual is not the issue. And I don't want anybody, you know, who listens to this show to do that because, you know, I've heard some whispers and that's not cool. You know, Bob Kincaid understands what he understands as the way he can goddamn understand it. He's a white man from Appalachia. He hasn't had to deal with the fuck I've had to deal with. And see, and that's saying that I've had to deal with the black experience doesn't say enough. Just saying I've had to deal with the native experience doesn't say enough. You know, I mean, I'm also fucking part Jewish. but I've never asked he had to be fucking cornered and shit as a Jew. Well, the two times it has happened is only because somebody knew my background. One was white, one was black. And, you know, neither of them really motherfucking had any goddamn real reason or cause for this shit other than they knew nothing about goddamn Jews and were going on some bullshit that they heard from some fucking buddy else. And because I got a goddamn big mouth and I'll suffer that apparently, you know, I will fucking tell you who the fuck I am and what the fuck I'm about and what blood I fucking carry without fear of fucking favor. See, after that is your motherfucking problem. See, it's the same thing with who I fuck. I don't put my personal business out there, but I fuck with whoever the fuck I like to fuck with. You know what I'm saying? That's all the goddamn it should be. No, I'm not going to carry a fucking flag for a cause. You know, I'm not going to walk, you know, specific. I mean, I've done all that shit in my younger years. But we're at a point now where, you know, Trump comes along. And people who have never been political ever in their goddamn lives, all of a sudden, they know every motherfucking thing. As opposed to someone like me, and yeah, I'm catching an attitude because we talked about this the last show. I've been political since the fourth goddamn grade. Do you understand? And it wasn't like I was thinking I was being political. I was just saying this is an injustice. This is wrong. And you can't fucking have a fourth grade kid in the United States who is of color and talk about Martin Luther King and then tell him to be quiet when he sees fucking injustice. And yes, you know, my natural father, I didn't really see him. The man that raised me, he worked all the goddamn time. I dealt more with my mother. I dealt more with the women of my family and all of their female fucking friends. You dig what I'm saying? I was raised around black women who didn't take shit, who didn't put up with bullshit. My mother and her friends got together and they started buying meat bulk. So that way they could, you know, evenly dole it out to the community. Do you understand? They didn't think that they were activists. They didn't see themselves like that. Socialism and communism didn't mean a goddamn thing to them. They did what the fuck they felt they needed to do. The men weren't able to fucking do it. And some of you are still dealing with this. And some of you are not dealing with this anymore. But I remember that growing up. When the white man would knock at the fucking door, my mother had to answer that shit because he couldn't fucking do it. You dig what I'm saying? So no, man, you know, I mean, the perspectives you hear here are fucking real. Again, unscripted, straight up. We don't ask you for money because we know you don't have any. We don't have any. You know, we're out here pushing, hoping that you push. Yeah, it would be nice if we could get somebody to get on their iPhone and they're over at the Dakota Access Pipeline protest and give us some reports. Yeah, we would dig that. We would like it if people who are missing indigenous women along these borders, either the Mexico U.S. border or the Canadian U.S. border, occupied Canadian U.S. border, you know, however you want to put it. Yeah, we would like that input. We would like that interaction. We keep pushing for that. But for some strange reason, right, Luke? You know, it seems we get feedback from a handful of fucking people. There's all this talk about alternative media. Yeah, I'm going on a tangent. But, you know, we put ourselves out there. You got other podcasts and radio programs, internet-based radio programs, that are putting themselves out there. But who's really scouring this shit? You know, the fucking alt-right is scouring this shit. You know, we've been alerted to, like, well, because they flat-out told us. We listen to your show. I know the neo-Nazis listen to this fucking show. The libertarians definitely listen to this show because they think I'm one of them. And yeah, I've been honest about this on this show and in print. When I first registered to vote, I registered as a libertarian. But see, this was part of my political education because I didn't know what the fuck they were really about. I was reading their literature, but that wasn't what they were about. They didn't tell me they were about white supremacy and all that shit. Dig what I'm saying? And on local ballots, you know, I mean, you used to have your socialist, your communist and shit for, you know, aldermen, bullshit like that. I used to vote on those tickets. I've been political my entire motherfucking life, man. You know, and it's just amazing me on how what is supposed to be the left in the United States is tacitly and passively supporting Trump because they hate Hillary Clinton so goddamn much.
I mean, Oprah Winfrey, somebody I don't give a fuck about. You know, I mean, she's, I mean, I don't like what she did with the Denier people. If you, you know, go back and look at that shit. They did a powwow for her. They don't powwow. We can talk about that. But the point is, Oprah Winfrey, you know, who is the, of the talented, whatever the fuck, what, talented 10th, right? You know, for, well, she's not really 400 club, but talented 10th now because she's earned enough motherfucking, you know, payroll. Yo, even she said, you don't have to like Hillary Clinton to vote for her. We're stuck with this political system until something actually goddamn changes. Okay? I'm saying that part. But the point is, she said, you don't have to like Hillary Clinton to vote for. This is true. I don't like Hillary Clinton. I've been talking about the super predator shit that she... because I've had to actually deal with that. I had to fucking had a cop... Two cops tell me, fucking face. Even these goddamn liberals don't fucking like you niggas. You understand what I'm saying? So, you know, no. You know, we got to bring them to heel. And then when people tried to fucking get her to own up to that bullshit, which would have earned her the undying loyalty to the motherfucking black community in the United States, she refused to fucking do it. There are men who are still fucking suffering, that are still in prison, that are still dealing with PTSD, that have lost their families because they got caught up in the bullshit that the Clinton administration started. But the bottom line is, we need to fucking be clear about something. Now, Trump has been calling out Hillary on shit that Bill Clinton did, his infidelities, even though this grab the pussy motherfucker has been going around and feeling people up as long as he's been able to. We haven't even gotten into his goddamn military school fucking career, because he never actually served in the motherfucking U.S. military. He never served in any branch of the U.S. goddamn military. And just like Ted Nugent, he talks a big goddamn game, but when it came to fucking sign up, he didn't goddamn go. And I fucking have said this here too. I went to fucking sign up because I was pushed by my motherfucking parents. Pick a branch. My family's Navy Marine Corps. I was told. I didn't have an option, really. I was told, pick a fucking branch. And I argued my motherfucking way down to, you know, registering for Selective Service like you were goddamn supposed to, which I did. I went down to the fucking post office and did what I was told to fucking do by the president. I signed up. I still got that goddamn card. How many of these motherfucking Republicans who are fit and of motherfucking age to go, go? Ask the college Republicans. You can go on YouTube and find video of these motherfuckers. Oh, I got a flat foot, or I got a bad back, or I got diabetes. You know, there's always a problem with them, but they want everybody else to fucking go. You know, no. You know, I went and I did that, right? Because I've talked about this experience. I went to the motherfucking recruiting station because they were all in the same goddamn building. And I walked in, and, you know, as far as my family's concerned, I was supposed to do a beeline to the fucking Navy and the Marine Corps. And I was standing between the fucking, you know, the offices between the Navy and the Marine Corps. And the way that they were fucking talking, I didn't want either. And I'm not saying this because the Trump shit is happening, but really, I probably should say this because the Trump shit is happening. The way the fucking Marines were talking, I didn't want anything to do with those fucking men that were in that room. The way they were talking about women. And I'm not going to sit here and say I'm pure as the driven snow. I'm a chauvinist and shit, but you know, I don't suffer from testosterone poisoning. There's a difference. There's a difference. There's a big fucking difference between, you know, adult talk, adult chatter, adult banter, and what the fuck Trump was talking about. And frankly, what the fuck these Marines were talking about. Now, we all know sailors that have, you know, really nasty goddamn mouths. Like I said, my family's fucking Navy. You know, I mean, I heard it all. But at the same time, I'm standing in between these two officers and I'm like, you know, what the fuck am I going to do? And I made a decision that, first off, I'm anti-war any goddamn way. So, you know, why was I even fucking here? Well, I was over there because my father told me, pick a fucking branch or you have to find another place to live. So, like I said, I opted for the, you know, you know, some call it the punk option. You call it what the fuck you want. You know, I call it the
having a conscience option, and I opted for selective service, meaning that if they fucking called me, well, I'll go and I'll make my motherfucking, you know, argument. And, you know, if they don't give me a fucking 4F or some shit, then I'll be a conscientious objector, but I'll still do my fucking bit. And what I say by that is, and, you know, the old time lefties, at least in the United States and Britain any goddamn way, and I would like to say Australia and New Zealand, because I've met people from there who had this experience. You know, you can be left wing and goddamn support your country. But see, you know, the Trump fuckers don't understand that. The John Birch Society bastards don't understand that. The Klan doesn't understand any goddamn thing, because they're just stupid. You know, terrorists are stupid. They're always goddamn stupid. I don't give a fuck if they're Christian or Muslim. They're stupid. You know, this Buddhist terrorism that occasionally goes down in Burma, they're fucking stupid too. Hindu terrorism, well shit, since Modi's been in fucking office, there's all kinds of Hindu goddamn terrorism. And yet the United States considers Modi to be a operative partner. So, you know, you have to, you know, hey, what's up? What the fuck is really happening here? And I'm watching the left support Trump by saying, hey, you know, this, that, and the other, Hillary's fucked up. Okay, Hillary is fucked up. You know she's a neoliberal, so that's just why I'm saying, if you're really a political motherfucking, you know, left-winger, why are you surprised by any of these emails? All it did was confirm what the fuck we already knew, that they were working against Bernie Sanders. We have been saying this without any of this fucking evidence. So what the fuck are you surprised for? So why are you going to side with the libertarians and alt-right and the outright neo-Nazis and the American fucking Klan if you're really against the sort of fascism that you say the fuck you're against? Or is it because that you're white and you really don't want to give up the fucking power and that you figure, well, under Trump, you can maintain something? Because that's what it really is, brothers and sisters. And that's what it's really always been about. Okay? You know, it's about white power. You know, now, a lot of folks on Twitter, anyway, because that's the only social media that I fuck with, you can check me out, The Angry Indian, at The Angry Indian on Twitter. And you can also drop us an email sometimes at Fourth World Radio. That's number 4TH, World Radio. Yeah. You know, what the fuck is going on with the left? You know, tell us what the fuck you think about this, because I think it's bullshit. I think it's bullshit when I'm reading counterpunch.org, and I'm seeing some shit talking about, well, Trump isn't all that bad. Trump's telling the truth. No, Trump isn't telling the truth about a fucking thing. He's not telling the truth about shite. Trump is a goddamn freak. He's a freak. You know, I mean, how anybody can honor the fucking idea that Donald Trump is about any goddamn thing is beyond me. And for women that support Donald Trump, what the fuck is wrong with you? You know, how the hell are you going to talk about, you know, for example, right? Because I still get these young brothers. I don't know what the fuck it is. You know, I mean, I asked my wife this shit. You know, I asked Ms. Angry Indian. I asked Loopy all the time. You know, what is it? My swagger? These motherfuckers want to talk to me about pimping. And it's like, I don't do this shit, man. You know, it's like, what the fuck? But, you know, it still bugs me that these young black brothers who should be studying science, who should be studying philosophy, who should be studying goddamn architecture, who should be studying agriculture, who should be studying diplomacy, who should be studying journalism. They should be, you know, learning everything that the black community in the United States, since you were really separate from Africa, let's be honest, they got borders over there. Matter of fact, they kept the colonial borders, which makes me wonder what the fuck post-colonial really means in the first goddamn place. But let's be straight up. Why are we not developing the fucking infrastructure to goddamn be independent? No. What happens? You know, you look at the, and I'm just, you know, I know, we're politically correct. Look, that bullshit is bullshit. You know, the whole politically correct thing came about by Republicans who were angry that they couldn't call motherfuckers like me a nigger, you know, and not suffer any goddamn consequences. So they called it political correctness. See, really, the whole progressive thing, because it wasn't liberals that started that shit. It was white progressives that saying, you know, what, well, we need to really check our language. So Republicans like Rush Limbaugh came back with political correctness. But we can't talk. But see, but we do need to talk. Those of us, especially those of us who, you know, born and raised on the East Coast, like I said, my experience is Philly. And up in New York City, you had Ellis Island, right? So you had Italians come in, and they were limited at one point. Chinese come in, but there was the Chinese Exclusion Act, right? You know, you had certain, you know, ethnic groups who are considered white today that were not considered white back then because they weren't Anglo-Saxon. They tried to limit as many Irish as they fucking could from coming here. And when they did come here, they were so goddamn racist against black people, they didn't even want to fight in the Civil War on that basis alone. They didn't want to fight for niggas, they said. Now, I know a lot of you, you know, kind of come to this knowledge because of the Martin Scorsese film, Gangs in New York, I think it was called. Gangs in New York, right, Lou? But, you know, it's more to it than that. I mean, you really should read the book that that's based on to really get the history. I mean, I did. The History of Philadelphia, I mean, I know this book's on it. I can't really, you know, quote any right now. But, you know, the point is, when the Italian mafia, La Cosa Nostra, when they got to a certain point, you know, at least those who, you know, old school anyway, they got to a certain point, they bought legitimacy. And they got their sons and nephews into political office. You know, in with the Irish in Boston, they became police officers. They became lawyers and judges and what have you. Now, it doesn't mean that the graft and the corruption didn't stop. I mean, the whole point of Gangs in New York was the Tammany Hall bit. Anybody who studies American politics can tell you about Tammany Hall. It was corrupt from the goddamn get-go. But the bottom line was they were playing ethnic groups and immigrants and shit against each other. And then you had the nativist thing, which is what Trump represents. So, you know, he's really part and parcel of the American experience, the early American political experience. He's pulled all of that populist bullocks. All right. And we're paying the price for this shit right now. And I'm saying we're paying the price for this collectively because it was never really ever fucking dealt with. You know, and this is where white liberals come in, because they like to talk about, well, you know, we dealt with this. We dealt with this, you know, Bob Marley, Kumbaya, right? Gullah Kumbaya, right? Well, you know, the fucking reality of all of this is white liberals have also done what they could to maintain white supremacy. If not white power outright, white supremacy. That there was still white privilege in effect. I mean, look, one of the reasons why Trump has been able to get away with everything that he's been getting away with has nothing to do with his political positions. He doesn't have any political positions. You know, it isn't because he represents morality in America, which should have nothing to do with politics any goddamn way in terms of religious belief and what have you. I mean, that's the federal fucking rules, but, you know, they don't care about that. No, because he's a hypocrite Christian who makes up Bible verses. He knows nothing about his own religion. You know, even as a layman, he knows absolutely nothing. He is not a Christian. He is not a religious person. He doesn't carry himself like a religious person. But he's getting away with it. You know, he's only getting away with these things because he's talking about white power. That's it. That's it. Now, you know, Hillary Rodham Clinton, I mean, okay, look, we already, you know, I've said this already, we already know she's a neoliberal advocate. She believes in collecting the biometric data of diplomats and what have you. Everybody's doing it. Do you people really don't think that Putin and the Russian government's doing this? I mean, you know, Edward Snowden is only allowed to stay in Russia because what? He tore apart the American, you know, intelligence system. So he's doing them a favor. So of course they'll give him a glad hand. It's not to their benefit to work against him. They're at odds with the U.S. anyway, you know, for trade things. I mean, look, you got South Ossetia being carved off of Georgia. You know, I'm really surprised that Russia didn't do more than it did. Think about this. Then you got the Ukraine and what have you. Then you got what they're doing in Chechnya. I mean, there's a lot of questions we could be asking here. Mongolians have questions. You understand what I'm saying? Yes, and then there's Iran. I know. You know, is Iran, you know, one of the nice countries? No, it isn't. But don't talk about, you know, Iran in terms of how they treat gay people and how they treat their ethnic minorities and what have you. You know, really, I don't want to hear it. You're doing worse over here. you're really not in the position to talk about Iran. You know, I mean, yeah, did they execute gay men over there? Yeah, they do. How many people over here want to execute gay people in the Republican Party? So it's like, come on. You know, they just haven't got around to that part yet. But, you know, with Trump in there, it's all, you know, all of that bullshit is on the table. You know, David Duke, Dr. quote-unquote David Duke. Well, no, he did get his doctorate. He had to go to Europe. But where is this, Slovenia, some shit that he got that doctorate? Because, you know, nobody will allow him to talk his crap all in the United States. So he had to find some obscure university overseas that would accommodate him. And, you know, he earned his paper. He got it. Well, now he's back in the United States, and he's been pretty clear about it. You know, not only is he endorsing Trump, you know, he what was he, the governor of Louisiana for a while? Lieutenant governor of Louisiana, something. He's had political office down there, and he ran a racist program the first time, and he's running a racist program this time. And he's basically saying, you know, Trump has opened the door, that white nationalism now has a place at the table. So, I mean, you know, you cats that consider yourselves to be libertarian, people of color, who consider yourselves to be leftists or whatever. Yeah, I don't like Hillary Clinton either, but you're really going to fuck around and let Trump get in, right? You know, with the bullshit article that they really does exactly the same thing. No, they're not exactly the same goddamn thing. See, that's lazy fucking politics. That's reactionary, lazy fucking politics. Hillary Clinton is bad. But the fuck if she's Trump? You know, for one goddamn thing, at least she understands what the fuck she's doing. She's actually held office and she's been a first lady. You know, she's been part of intelligence committees and what have you. I mean, again, why are you surprised? Anybody that's part of the system, including Mr. Obama, they're down with all of this. You folks who thought that, you know, somehow Mr. Obama was not, you know, down with assassinations and shit. What the fuck are you talking about? If you didn't think that he wasn't down with deporting immigrants, what, 3.5 million goddamn Spanish-speaking immigrants have been deported from the United States? You know, Bush didn't even get up to 1 million. And how many are still residing in black sites? What are you talking about? You know, drone assassinations and shit? Mr. Clinton's been all about that, man. He's been sued by families because of this shit. And these people probably were, you know, terrorists. They probably were aiding terrorism. But the point was, is that it wasn't, you know, fixed in a court of law. And I'm saying fixed, you know, because who the fuck knows right now with shit? You know, a lot of these prosecutions are malicious because of political, you know, things. But, you know, one of these cats, where he and the son, I believe the son was 16, they were both killed by drones. I believe he was an extremist. Was he directly involved in whatever? I don't know, but he was preaching it, right? So, I suppose that was their justifications for taking him out. But it wasn't done in a court of law. You know, he wasn't, you know, apprised or made aware of what the fuck he was being accused of. That there was no, you know, it was all done in absentia. And then they just decided to tell some alt-right, Capri Sun sucking 4 and 8chan you know, regular, you know, at some base somewhere in I don't know, where are they, in the Midwest or in New Jersey, wherever the fuck they are, sitting there with a joystick and wiped out these two people just following orders, right? I mean, remember when I was gonna say Podesta, but I'm not talking about him, the cat that ran the agency for a while used to work with Clinton, and then they made him head of the agency. Panetta, Leon Panetta, the Italian immigrant's son, right? Leon Panetta, who just about every time he gave a speech looked like he was about to cry. You know, I mean, every time. And I remember him saying, you know, don't quote me, but I remember him saying that these people who run the drone programs, you know, these drone pilots, they're not actually flying anywhere, you know, they're playing a fucking video game. But, you know, that shit. I mean, yeah, obviously it takes a certain level of skill. I mean, I couldn't do it. I don't play video games. I play chess on video. You know, I mean, if I do play any computer games at all, I play chess. Chess and Mahjong, that's it. You know, I'm not living and taking on the identities of these motherfucking characters and shit. You know, I don't want to be a soldier. You know, I don't want to do the war in me, the warrior in me, or whatever the fuck. I'm not into this bullshit. You know, Grand Theft Auto and all this crap. I'm not into this. I don't identify with it. But evidently, people who consider themselves to be gamers do identify with this. So they got one of these gamers. I'm not trying to diss anybody. Because that's who they're hiring for these drone pilot programs. That these cats are suffering from PTSD because they, you know, they're starting to think about this shit. I just wiped somebody out or fucked up a wedding party. They didn't do anything. Now, I'm all about going after the terrorists. Get them all. But be sure about who the fuck it is that you're going after. I mean, you know, you got all these folks who are so gung-ho about the goddamn military, even though they've never even thought about serving. You know, they just keep talking shit about it. You know, at least I went. You know what I'm saying? At least I still got my Selective Service goddamn card. And if I was forced to go, I would fucking go. And if we were goddamn invaded, you wouldn't even have to ask me. This is my home. This is my home. And I'm not going to just sit by and allow some motherfucker to come in here. I mean, I already got enough problem with the system that's already here, let alone have to deal with somebody the fuck else. You know, and I suppose that's, you know, the attitude that most Native Americans have. And most black people have when they go to serve, when they're drafted. You know, I mean, most people are going in because, frankly, there's no fucking jobs, you know, because people like Trump, you know, and Clinton. But we're talking about Trump right now, right? You know, he's the one that's going to, you know, take it all back. You know, send all the goddamn jobs out. That's what he's going to do. Yeah, I know I went on a tangent, but, you know, think about this. Now, if we really want to ding Clinton and it's being done, you know, we can look at Haiti. The Clinton Foundation fucked up Haiti twice over. The UN fucked over Haiti with cholera. Yeah, there was already cholera there, but we know goddamn for sure that the fucking cholera that the outbreak that they're dealing with now came from South Asia. But the UN won't do anything about it. They won't take responsibility for it other than say, okay, well, yeah, well, you got us, but, you know, can't, you know, nothing can be done. You know, so same thing with these drone pilots. Well, you know, nothing can be done. I got the order, right? So, you know, I go ahead and I do it. But, you know, no court of law. And somehow, you know, you figure that, well, because Mr. Obama is black, that, you know, when he does it, there's a real justification for it. And the only justification for it is I'm black, he's black. So, you know, he deserves his peace prize. Right? How many black people who are angry with Hillary Clinton about Haiti believe that Mr. Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, deserves a peace prize? Stop those same people on the street and ask them after what we just talked about here, if he deserves a peace prize. No, he doesn't deserve a peace prize. I mean, the fact that, you know, Bob Dylan just got this UN thing. I mean, I understand the recognition, you know, and all that. But, you know, the fact that Kissinger got the goddamn peace prize doesn't mean, you know, it shows that it doesn't mean any goddamn thing. It doesn't mean anything. You know, Friedman. Milton Friedman won a fucking Nobel Prize. How much damage did he do in Chile? How much damage did he do throughout goddamn South America? Brazil. Everywhere the Chicago machine went. The same Chicago machine that, you know, or Mr. Obama comes out of. But see, how many fucking people called him on that? Yeah, you get the Alice Jones motherfucking nutcases and the hoteps that listen to Alice Jones. You know, they called them on it because they didn't have too much else. You know, and they were focusing on what the white folks were focusing on. Like I said, Alice Jones. You know, making those arguments. Like I said, if you really want to go after Clinton, you could talk about Bertha Caceres. You could talk about Haiti. You know, and you could talk about Muammar Gaddafi and what she is fucking on film as having, you know, having said. If you really want to get on her, the Benghazi thing is bullshit. And you know, again, you know, to recap, you know, this fucking WikiLeaks thing, you know, some of you folks on the left, man, you know, my fellow travelers, why are you surprised? Why are you waving this around like, you know, you're holding, you know, the smoking gun on how fucked up, you know, the Clinton shit is? You already knew this. All it did was confirm that you already knew. That she's a neo-capitalist, that she's totally neoliberal in her policies and in her thinking, and that she's going to support the police. You know, what makes you think that you know, you found out something that nobody else goddamn found out? You know? I mean, really, save that kind of shit. Put it in your pocket, man, because some of us have already fucking been there.
And just because you finally read an article someplace or you heard somebody talk about it, you just found out, so now you're going to tell the rest of us? No. That means that you weren't paying attention to the fucking beginning of this. So, you know, if you were already against that sort of shit, then fucking be against it. But you were against everything Obama was goddamn about, but you fucking supported him anyway. Why? Because you saw what was coming from the Republican end. So, you know, why is it, you know, this time you're going to help somebody like a Trump, who's nowhere near a fucking Romney now, who's nowhere near a fucking Romney, who's nowhere near a goddamn McCain. You're going to let an out-and-out motherfucking Nazi who's flat-out being supported by America's oldest fucking terrorist organization, the Ku Klux Klan, and the American Nazi Party, what's left of it. But they've grown over the few years, haven't they, right? Because Mr. Obama never really did anything about motherfucking neo-Nazism. He knew that it was going to be a problem, but he tried to motherfucking ignore it. You know, he blamed Black Lives Matter. You know, he's making, you know, positive statements now, but where was it when you really needed him in Baltimore? He wasn't there. You know, did he put on comfortable shoes and walk with the, you know, $15 an hour people? No, absolutely not. But he deserves his Peace Prize, though, right? You know, why do you wait for, you know, Hillary? Because she's white? Now, you know, you're ready to say something about the Democratic Party, but you wouldn't say it under Obama. So the whole point of Obama being the face of white power, you missed all of that, I suppose. And now you're ready to motherfucking do another goddamn flip based on this fucking false information, based on this jaundiced fucking viewpoint that you've been sold. That how many hoteps are out there been pushing? Yeah, they talk shit about Obama, but if Obama came around, they would have fucking kissed his ass just like every goddamn buddy else. You know? And yeah, you know, I didn't even want to hear about Minister Farrakhan, because he still lives in a white motherfucking part of Chicago, in a mansion, in the white section of Chicago. So, no, I don't want to fucking hear it. There's gold tape tapestries. I've seen photographs of the inside of his house. There was one layout in Ebony, and Jet has been in there a couple of times, and the man lives like a fucking king. Lives like a fucking king. Now, Dr. Fidel Castro Ruz, now, when his daughter defected and came over here, she went on television, because I watched it, and she says, oh, my father's so dedicated to the movement, to the cause, that he denies himself everything except rum and cigars. Our house had nothing. And she complained about not being able to have little glass figurines and be able to collect, you know, objects to art and all that kind of shit, right? You know, she wasn't able to get knickknacks from the U.S. and have burgers, she said, or something to that effect. You know, it was a long time ago. But, you know, she said, yeah. And while they were over here, you know, telling us in school that, you know, Castro lives in a castle, lives like a king, you know, in Russia, these leaders live like a king. No, that's a complete motherfucking lie. You know, there was building complexes that were a little better than what the average Russian had. But still, you know, there was nothing grand about these units that they had. You know, they had certain privileges, but it wasn't extreme, man. You know, now when certain leadership came in, things got a little looser one way or the other. And then, you know, other countries, Romania, I mean, East Germany was pretty strict, but, you know, Romania, right, Bulgaria, you know, they're, you know, the further they were away from Moscow, I suppose, they had a little more fucking latitude, you know, so it depends. It always depended on what the fuck the system that you were dealing with was about, because it always depends on who the fuck has the gold and has the guns, right? And who has control of the lawyers, which dictate the motherfucking day-to-day literal reality of the society. So what I'm saying is, as bad as goddamn Hillary Clinton is, at least you understand what the fuck you're dealing with, and she wouldn't put the entire fucking system at risk. Whereas here you got Trump, he's selling out his own goddamn political fucking party because they won't fucking, you know, blindly support his ass. With all the fucking shit that's floating around him, and I mean literally, the feces that is floating around this son of a bitch, he's going to court here on December 16th to answer rape charges. Of a child.
I mean, a federal judge has ordered that his child rape case can move forward. And, I mean, goddamn, man. I mean, was it Jeffrey Sterling, who everybody knows is a fucking pedophile, whose money brought him out of motherfucking trouble, okay? A sexual assault case against a minor, this motherfucker. I mean, besides all of the other women. Oh, no, what did she say? Okay, Loopy is telling me here to correct this. Jeffrey Epstein. What did I say? Because I got the name wrong, whoever it was. Yeah, so let me correct that right now. Jeffrey Epstein. And what do you have here? Occupy Democrats. Yeah, Occupy Democrats. Yeah, they've been around for a while. This is a story by Grant Stern, and it was posted October 11th, 2016. A federal judge has ordered Trump's child rape case to move forward. Updated. A federal judge just decided to haul Donald Trump to court to face accusations of child rape in mid-December. And here's the proof. It's a link to the actual, paperwork. It's only been 1 week since new witnesses stepped forward and the sexual assault case was refiled against Trump, focusing new public attention on the case and convincing a federal judge that there was more than enough probable cause to move forward with the case. Federal Judge Ronnie Abrams has ordered the hearing for 16 December in a New York court. She has asked for both sides to provide information to assist the court in advancing the case to settlement or trial. So he can buy his way out of this, essentially. The allegations against Trump apparently occurred in the 1990s when Trump was attending parties thrown by convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein, or is it Stein, on this side of the pond. Yeah, because I forget. Anyway, who was notorious? Jeffrey Epstein Stein, who was notorious for arranging sex parties with underage girls for America's wealthy elites. It's kind of like the Franklin scandal. Two witnesses are now joined by a third, Joan Doe, who said in court documents, in the 1994-95 school year, I was told by the plaintiff in Jane Doe versus Trump and Epstein that the plaintiff was subject to sexual contact by the defendants at the parties by both of these men in New York City during the summer of 1994. Trump's camp has immediately denied all the accusation and denied all connection to Epstein, even though he told New York Magazine in 2002 that I've known Jeff for 15 years. Terrific guy. He's a lot of fun to be with. It is even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side. No doubt about it, Jeffrey enjoys his social life. Wow, I knew about this case, but what he said here about, at first he's, you know, I'm denying all of this, means I've known him for 15 years, terrific guy, a lot of fun to be with. Even if it's said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them are on the younger side, no doubt about it, Jeffrey enjoys his social life. Yeah, and you can look at the complaint here. This is on OccupyDemocrats.com. And like I said, the article's by Grant Stern. It's from the 11th of this month. Wow, go look at it. Wow. I mean, what is there to say after that? What is there to say after some shit like that? He's a fucking creep. And this is what you want to let in? Despite the fact that he's connected to he's directly connected to another government and the motherfucking Russian mob. You know, you know, I mean, we've been talking about this for a while around here. But, you know, in Philly and in New Jersey, because, you know, I didn't go to Atlantic City very much, you know. Newark, you can get there, but because it's there. There's nothing to do in goddamn Newark. But never been in any of his establishments, man. But, you know, it's a known, it's just kind of like common knowledge on the East Coast that, Trump is connected to the fuck, you know, to the Italian mafia here in the States. But then there was a court thing where Manafort, remember him? You know, he was in and then he was out. He's connected to the Russian mob. And then there was somebody else, can't remember the name, that Trump's connected to, that's connected to the Russian mob. And then you got this whole thing with Clinton. And then, you know, here then what? He was being defended in the United Nations not too long ago, the other day, right? So, yeah, get it together. you know, understand, you know, you don't have to like Hillary Clinton, but understand, you know, what kind of a game you're dealing with here. You're going to fuck around and not vote or vote for Jill Stein or some kind of crap. And yeah, and it's hard to take Jill Stein seriously. And a lot of Native Americans decided that they're not taking her seriously anymore. I don't know where I read this. We linked to it someplace. I definitely put it on Twitter. Check me out on Twitter at The Angry Indian. And check out our news feed, actually, too. Aboriginal Press, at Aboriginal Press. You know, people are questioning Jill Stein showing up to the Dakota Access Pipeline thing and making a news splash by, spray can. She took a spray can and wrote no DPL, you know, DAPL on one of the things. Well, you know, I mean, a lot of people were out there doing that, and they got busted. But the news was all about her doing this, right? And then it's been a couple of white people. Amy Goodman was one. And you would think that there would have been heavy, heavy press on that. Well, there was heavy alternative press on it. Mainstream press just kind of talked about it. You know, I mean, like talked about it on page 37 somewhere. This white actress was down there. That made news. That they took her in. And that they strip searched her. But they was strip searching all the Native sisters too. That didn't make the news. It made some of the alternative news, but it didn't make the news. You know, something else I'm looking at here, only because Lupe wants me to mention this. Violence against the transgender community, this year is a motherfucker. You know, what is it? What is it? And you know, and what fucking gets me about this is they're being killed by black men. You know, what the fuck is wrong, man? You don't like it, right? You don't like it. Well, okay, you don't have to goddamn like it, but you have to kill these people? I mean, what the fuck is wrong with you? You don't like faggots. Well, that's funny, because you're going to be, now for the rest of your motherfucking life, where all there is male-on-male sex. You ruined this person's fucking life by taking it, and now your fucking life ain't worth shit. So you fucking tell me what the fuck you gained out of doing this, my brother. Then, yeah, you know, full disclosure, I had a cousin who I love, man. You understand? I had a cousin I loved on a black fucking college campus who was shot to death in bed by somebody he was fucking with. You know, the word got out. You know, I don't know how it got out, but, you know, he obviously, you know, this is one version of the story. You know, the other version of the story that it was hate. That's a flat-out hate crime. But it was a hate crime no matter how you goddamn look at it. You see, he didn't even have a chance to sit up and even look at this motherfucker. He was asleep. You understand what I'm saying? And, you know, I'm still bothered by that shit. And it was a long fucking time ago. It was many, 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 many fucking moons ago. But, you know, I shouldn't have to have a story like that to be able to have legitimacy in saying that this motherfucking hatred of transgender people has to motherfucking stop. It has to stop. You know, I don't know what the fuck y'all think you're doing. You know, you're earning credit with God or something, that, you know, somehow this is going to earn you some, you know, that this shit is going to earn you some kind of props, you know, with Jesus and shit. You know, I mean, I don't know what the fuck it is that's going through, you know, your fucking minds. You motherfuckers need to get it together. You know, you need to get it together. You just snuff somebody the fuck out because they're different. Well, they aggravate you, you know. Well, then go some fucking place else. You know, I see baggy fucking jeans and shit. Well, fucking, the goddamn denims are hanging down there, you know, mid-thigh. Yeah, it fucking annoys me. That's why I said when Don Lemon, you know, came out with that shit, I understood where Don Lemon was coming from. I just didn't like the way he came out with it. But I understood. I felt where the fuck he was coming from. And like I said, you see Lester Holt, you see them, you understand what the fuck I look like. But yo, man, you know, all of that. Say all of that shit, call me an Oreo, say whatever the fuck you want, man. There's a whole lot of shit that I see our people goddamn do that fucking annoy me. Shit that we say, shit that we do, shit that we think is fucking funny that really isn't goddamn funny at all. and this, you know, card somehow to win you're black, that to prove your blackness, you know, you have to go around and insult motherfucking people who are, you don't feel are as black enough or black enough for you. Right? You know, they're not black enough to suit you. Because this is something I deal with on a daily goddamn basis in white-ass motherfucking Portlandia. You know? Well, you know, I'm super black, and, you know, I'm black in you because I got dreadlocks, or I'm black in you because, you know, I got this big Africa tattooed on my chest, you know, I'm black in you because, you know, I only fuck with hood rats, or this, that, and the other. And it's like, okay, you know, that's cool if that's your understanding of blackness. I mean, this is like, with, you know, being Jewish. I mean, it's a big question. You know, what is a goddamn Jew? Really? You know, because I'm in this discussion too. I'm mixed, right? You know, it's like, what is a Jew? For some people, it's being from. Totally. Some people will talk about their, you know, their particular family history, you know, going back to Krakow or some shit. You know, some will talk about, you know, how, you know, high holidays, they do something and shit. I mean, my mother kept the menorah in the house, you know. There were certain high holidays and shit she lit that. But, you know, that was about it. Other than her buying kosher and us, you know, nibbling on goddamn matzo crackers all day. I mean, it depends on how you look at it. Because, you know, the contradiction was she was still buying Spam because she's part Filipino too, right? So, you know, it's like all kinds of craziness when we're in the United States comes up with discussion. And, well, I guess I'm leading into that. Luffy's telling me to start wrapping this up. See, one of the other things I was going to talk about, since we're on the, like, you know, is it black enough for you thing, since we're on that theme, because, you know, a lot of people call themselves being super black by not supporting Hillary Clinton. And I can understand that. If you go and look at my goddamn Twitter feed, check me out. Go ask about a motherfucker. I haven't supported Clinton through any of this shit, and I don't support her now. But I'm not motherfucking going to do anything to help Trump. You got to understand the motherfucking shit here. Having a hard stance some fucking times doesn't mean any goddamn thing if you're not going to make any progress with it. Now, you can do the protest vote for Jill Stein. But Jill Stein has been quiet about a whole lot of racist bullshit that's been out there too. And her running partner, her vice presidential candidate, there's a lot of questionable things about him too. You know, in terms of, you know, black radicalism, a lot of these guys who consider themselves to be hoteps and ready to vote for Stein, if they looked up her vice president shit, I don't know if they really, you know, be down with it. You know, again, these are protest votes. And what was it? She's talking about vaccines, and then she kind of backtracked on it. Then she's talking about waves from microwave units and shit that, you know, we don't want our kids subjected to microwave units or some kind of experimentation. You know, it's like, wait a fucking minute. And she hasn't really been clear about a lot of this. And I know that Democracy Now! Has been giving her play because her and her candidate, they are the most politically advantageous, I suppose, for the left in terms of alternative votes that they're giving them play. And I can understand that. And on that basis alone, I guess you have to do it. But when you get to the fucking polls, what are you going to do? You know, I know there's a lot of black motherfuckers here that consider themselves to be libertarians in PDX, and they say they're going to vote for Gary Johnson, even after the tongue-wagging goddamn incident. On film, they're still going to vote for him. Again, protest goddamn vote. Even though you can tell them about Ron Paul and show them, and they've read the shit that I've written on Ron Paul, they still are going to support him. They don't like Hillary Clinton. She's a neoliberal, and their whole point is, I'm against war. And I'm like, but what about police brutality, institutional racism? Well, you know, I don't experience racism, and I think, you know, the people that do, basically, is they bring it upon themselves. You know that all that Sheriff Clark type of, you know, I'm not a nigga type shit. And see, here it is. I might look like motherfucking Lester Holt, but see, Lester Holt wouldn't say a goddamn thing. He say that the motherfucking neo-Nazi has a right to speak. See, at least Don Lemon would get in your motherfucking ass. You know what I'm saying? You know, so yeah, when you see an Uncle Tom and shit, man, you know, listen and look at what the fuck it is that they do and check them out on that basis and make a decision. You know, that, you know, I'm blacker than you shit, man. Save that, man. I've been hearing that shit since the fucking 70s. And, you know, those cats that talk all that super black shit didn't say a goddamn thing when Dr. Love, oh no, excuse me. I knew him first as Dr. Love, but the cat that ran the, I can't even pronounce this shit.
New Wanubian or whatever the fuck it is. You know who I'm talking about. The cat, they got him for child, goddamn. He was a fucking pedophile. They were talking about that shit when he was Dr. Love back in Philly. You know, now I'm gonna have to look that motherfucker up. I can't remember his shit. He's in the joint right now. But he used to be known as Dr. Love. No, I'm gonna look it up. Don't bother. I'm gonna look it up because I couldn't even tell you how to spell this shit. No, and it's like, you know, I am totally Malachi York. Dr. York, right? He went from Dr. Love to Dr. York. The new, I knew, I'm not even gonna try to, I admit, you know, I knew who the fuck they were. I mean, I've had my run-ins with them. You know, they consider themselves to be a black Indian tribe. And, you know, they call themselves the, what is it here? The Moors of the Creek in Washita. See, Washita, that's how, that's the other way that I know them. And otherwise known as Dr. Malachi Z. York. You know, I mean, look, man, you know, I never met him or anything, but he used to produce albums. And when I was in Newark, well, going between, you know, the families, I got, you know, sent and shuttled back and forth between and shit, between Newark and Philly. He was known as a producer. And, you know, there was cats that wanted to be engineers that I knew that tried to work for him or with him or what have you. And, you know, they couldn't get past his whatever. But, you know, I mean, he had a couple of, you know, locally selling albums that didn't, or 45s anyway, that didn't do too bad. You know, I mean, they got local radio play and shit like that. I mean, if I remember correctly, he kind of had a voice, you know, and he started producing groups, mostly girl groups. He had a couple of fellas groups and shit. I want to say that Stacey Ladislaw was actually in his studio at one point when she was really, really young. Like, nobody really knew her. Because, you know, there were a lot of studios back in the hood, and there still are. You know, we are in kind of a setup like that here in Portland. It's not exactly the same thing, but you get what I'm talking about. Now, yeah, they got him over here at NBC News. Georgia Culp goes quiet after leader's jail. But, yeah, man, I mean, he was in there for child molestation charges and shit. And, you know, most hoteps, right off, they don't want to hear it. That's an impossibility because a real black man wouldn't do this, or Maryland wouldn't allow us to do this, and all this type of shit. And I don't understand it because, you know, I don't have as much melanin as they do. You know, it's like, hey, man, whatever. You know, that blacker than thou shit, that, full-blooded Indian FBI, thing, you know, I understand it. I know where it's coming from. I dig it. But, you know, get real. This is the United States, man. Occupied North America, 2016. And, that racial supremacy shit is yesterday. You know, I understand where you're coming from. And I will tell you here that, you know, it is motherfucking odd when I see an Asian cat with a name like, you know, McGillicuddy. And, you know, some Asians are just gonna, you know, so a lot of us are just gonna have to get used to a lot of this shit. You know, when somebody says that there's something and they don't particularly look that goddamn way, you know, I'm including myself in this because historically a lot of these names don't match. So like I said, remember when Holtzclaw, got caught up in that shit? You know, raping all these goddamn black women? Police officer in Oklahoma. You know, you look at him and it's like, okay, I'm thinking, okay, Oklahoma, I'm looking at him. I'm like, well, he doesn't really look native, but he looks more Asian, looks Hopper, right? But you're not supposed to say Hopper. You're not even supposed to think it. And people were asking me, and they're like, hey, man, you know, you got people in Oklahoma, Holtzclaw, what kind of name is that? And I'm like, it's not native. Right? You know, so it's like, what the fuck? You know, what's really going on here? Hey, man, the country's changing. Now, what I will say is, if white people didn't want it to get like this, if you didn't want your son bringing home a Mexicana and all this type of shit, well, then you motherfuckers should have stayed in Europe. You should have stayed home. You know, I mean, you brought people in here to work for cheap, and then you didn't want them to leave. You didn't want them to leave because you didn't want to have to do that work. That's how it happened.
That's how it happened. I mean, you know, at least the Mexicans I've known, a lot of them said they wouldn't be up here if they could have these conditions in Mexico. But the United States government pretty much controls the government of Mexico. And let's also face facts. You know, South America, Mexico and South America looks the way it goddamn does. And Spanish Africa looks the fucking way it does because of the people who ran it. You know, Spain only became fucking Spain after the Reconquista. You know, it was run by the Muslims quite logically and quite profitably. But then look at who took over. People who did things by the sword and had no sense of, you know, culture, really. You know, they made themselves. That whole blue blood shit, lifting their arms up, you know, to prove how pure they were, how white they were. Aragon, right? You know, I mean, Isabella, all of that type of bullshit. You know, the Christian, you know, Catholic, you know, reconquest of Europe. Because it wasn't in the hands of Europeans. The only reason we know about Plato and, you know, Aristophanes and shit is because Arabs wrote it down. Europeans didn't write. The Visigoths didn't write a goddamn thing. They didn't do any fucking thing. Except share bathwater. I mean, really, what the fuck did they do? You know, everything that happened in that part of fucking Europe, that advanced that part of Europe as fast as it goddamn did, came from where? Moorish influence. So you get a lot of brothers and sisters in the United States to read that, and somehow they find their way over to connecting with the Moors. I don't have a problem with that, necessarily. I mean, I connect with the Buddha, because I know that the Buddha was a Dravidian. He was a black Indian, and he was a black Indian philosopher. So on that basis, I follow Buddhism. That's my understanding of Buddhism. Like, we were talking about understandings of blackness, understandings of, you know, not Judaism, but of Jewishness, right? Of Indianness. Well, that's how I identified to it. I had no blood tied to that, you know, other than a background as an African. So, philosophically, did I say that right? You know, I look to Africa. And I look to people of color that are connected to the African experience. Tangibly, shaky, but at least there's some kind of an argument that can be made there. And that is one philosophy in which I chose, in which to base, you know, my decisions on in terms of my moral grounding. That's one of them. The Catholicism that I was raised with will always be with me because that's how Catholics do it, right? You know, I mean, it is what it is. And there's quite a bit in my Catholic background that I call on because it's good. You know, I have no shame of having been Catholic worker. I'm actually quite proud of it because Catholic workers did quite a bit. When you think about Bishop Romero and a lot of the nuns that have been killed and mangled, and the priests that have been killed and mangled in South America, you're looking at Catholic workers. And I take no, you know, no issue with that. They do good work. El Papa right now, the current El Papa, is doing as good work as he can be expected to do within the institutional fucking confines of what's going on. You know, a lot of people on the left don't want to give him a quarter, but it's like, look, you're talking about how many goddamn generations of this. It's not like the Catholic Church just popped up yesterday and isn't connected to the fucking world's, you know, comings and goings. They got a goddamn seat at the UN, non-voting, but they got a seat at the fucking UN, which means they have influence. Get real. You don't have to like something to respect the fact that it has weight. This is what I'm talking about here. Well, this is part of what I was talking about. We need to be fucking realistic. Yes, you're going to see, you know, people from South Asia who they're going to have the name Smith. Look at Nikki Haley. She goes out of her way to let you know she's a Southern gal. And Babe, otherwise known as Piyush Jindal, goes totally out of his way to prove to you that he can be just as bigoted against black people, Latinos, and Native Americans as any other white man in the South. You know, even though Trump gets in, well, he doesn't look American to me. Nikki Haley doesn't look American to me. Matter of fact, didn't he say something about Nikki Haley without realizing that she was born and raised in the fucking U.S.? You know, but when it comes to, well, I'm an American, well, what do you really, you know, when we look at the Dakota Access Pipeline, what is American really about? Are you so American that you're against Indians having their fucking land? Or are you supportive of Indian sacred sites and burial sites being, you know, just
you know, totally manicured out of existence. That's what happened over here in Mount Herbert, the Bundy family, supported by Trump. The Bundy family was supported by Trump. And Jerry DeLimas, who was up there representing the Trump campaign. The second action by they got him for the first action he did with the Bundy family. But he was at the second one, representing the Trump fucking campaign. He's being, you know, charged with sedition right now. How come this is not coming over to Trump? Why doesn't the left use this? I mean, all of that energy you're using against Hillary Clinton right now, you could be fucking focusing on Trump and his goddamn foreign connections. His mafia connections in this country and in Russia. I mean, you don't even have to bother with the goddamn sexual assault allegations against him because he's admitted to basically doing this shit. I mean, you see Billy Bush lost his motherfucking job. So, you know, where is your focus? You know, I'm not getting it. And I'm not feeling it. You know, I'm just, you know, we're getting caught up in all kinds of personal, you know, the political is personal shit without, you know, really looking at the whole thing and asking ourselves, are we making a fucking mistake? And where are we going to end up if we keep going on like this? So, yeah, I've said enough. I had no particular subject anyway, so, you know, it is what it is. This is, what do you say, spoken word, right? Yeah. All right, look, you know, considering the fact that I'm being redundant, you know, Trump is a goddamn fascist. White people are flipping the fuck out. You know, they're completely worried about losing fucking power. And that's on the right, where it's rabid, and on the left, where it's passive. And, you know, you'll find a handful of young black folks who somehow think they're Republican and Jesus will protect them from the lynch mobs that are supporting Trump. But, you know, I mean, they're like less than goddamn 1%. You know, some crazy fucking poll gave 7%, but they're being fucking generous. And obviously it was a poll, you know, controlled by alt-right motherfuckers. And when you find these people, you know, they have no connection to the fucking black community whatsoever. You know, I mean, they're a lot like me. They're completely goddamn isolated. You know, they're surrounded by white people. And frankly, they're scared. You know, it really isn't a matter that they see things fucking differently. They're scared. You know, and Trump is playing off in this fear. But then at the same time, you know, Hillary Clinton is also playing off in the same fucking fear. It's like, if you don't get me, you get him. So, you know, really, if you're of color and if you're Native American, consider what's happening in the Dakota Access Pipeline. If you want to look at that and not look at missing murdered indigenous women, and I want to look at the fact that, you know, Native Americans suffer from police brutality more than any other ethnic group in the United States. I mean, I suppose you can, you know, be selfish and say that it's all about you, which is what American politics are about any goddamn way. But yeah, you know, we can do that. And then we can wonder again. In another 4 motherfucking years when we deal with an outright motherfucker talking, but we already got fucking people talking about Hitler and shit on the Republican Party and how he made grand, you know, positive statements. So, you know, why are we being surprised about what's up with Trump? He started off with a fucking Nazi meme on Twitter and he hasn't apologized for it. It's still up there. So, you know, what are we surprised about? What are we surprised about? You know, WikiLeaks? Well, we all know the fucking WikiLeaks is full of shit at this point. You know, and then we already know they're taking sides. You know, just like Ed Snowden has given money to Ron Paul, right? So we already understand his politics. And so has Julian Assange given money to Ron Paul. He's spoken very positively of Ron Paul. We all know what the fuck Ron Paul's politics are about, don't we? He's a neo-Nazi. He always motherfucking has been. You know, if he's hanging with Don, was it Don Black? Well, he's got a black and white problem, right? You know, one cat, his last name is Black. The other one, his last name is White. I don't know what the fuck that's supposed to mean. But, you know, they've gotten into beefs with each other over, you know, sponsorship and support for Ron Paul or whether or not they're going to support him. I know Don Black is one of them. Bill White, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's the other one. So, you know, it's like, nah. You know, Trump is a motherfucking neo-Nazi being supported by neo-Nazis, and those people who are trying to connect Bill Ayers to, you know, to Obama for some reason don't see the links between David Duke
or in Trump? Or is it that they do see the links between David Duke and Trump and like those links and just don't want to come right the fuck out and say it? You know, because it's a lot easier to blame somebody else for your motherfucking racism, isn't it? This is the Angry Indian, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Samantha Nock at Samiria on Twitter, a halfbreedsreasoning.wordpress.com, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Spending per person set to fall 9% over the next 5 years. But Theresa May has told Simon Stevens, the chief executive of the NHS, that there will be no further funding for the NHS. However, by outsourcing, can the NHS... fuck off. It's not outsourcing. Can we at least call it what it is, Tim? It's privatisation. It's not outsourcing. The guy that runs the NHS says it desperately needs more money. Why don't they just give him more money? What does that fucking bitch not understand? It's the NHS! When she walked into number 10 and announced her cabinet, that was a statement of intent for the NHS, and the statement was this: fuck the NHS. By keeping Jeremy Hunt on, she was saying, I don't give a shit about the NHS, I don't give a shit about doctors, man. Keep doing what you're doing, Jeremy, you're doing a great job. And at the conference this year, she called the Tories the party of the NHS. Last year, it was the NHS safe in our hands. Jeremy Hunt is not a safe pair of hands. What he is probably the richest person in the cabinet, and with this lot, that is saying something, and he's overseeing £8 billion worth of NHS contracts being put out to tender. How can you not call that privatisation? Fuck me, Tim, we're not even allowed to call it cuts. It's £22 billion worth of efficiency savings. I'm sorry, that's cuts. How do you privatise one of the country's most treasured institutions? I tell you what, you run it into the ground. So the increased waiting lists and shortage of beds and staff, it means for the NHS to even function, it has to outsource. It has to privatise itself to survive. You make it privatise itself. What? Yes, Tony Blair's government did start this, and Theresa May's government will sure as hell fucking end it. Party of the NHS. That's almost like when David Cameron called the Tories the party of equality with a cabinet full of multi-millionaires. The only time that bitch has got it right is years ago when she called the Tories, when she said the Tories had to stop being the nasty party. Well, she's managed it because privatising the NHS in the open, that's nasty. Doing it by stealth, making the NHS have to privatise itself, that is insidious. There you go, the Tory party. The insidious party. Fuck them. What? Yes, yeah. Okay. Efficiency savings, yeah. Outsourcing, yeah. Okay. I need a fucking shower after this. Okay. I'm here outside St. Bart's Hospital in London, where Elliot...
Idle No More calls all people
to join in peaceful revolution,
to honor indigenous sovereignty,
and protect the land and water
for generations to come.
Mexicans, South Americans, all indigenous people, get inspired,
take action,
and become a part of the solution.
It's my future,
your future,
our future.
We are the protectors of Mother Earth.
Stand up and protect it.
Stand up and protect it.
Stand up
and protect our Earth.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
And become a part of this incredible movement.
The time has come.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Become idle no more.
Dance to ya, kakioni wakuma kantik.
Winston Wataninia, Miksuachi, Saskatchewan, Ootsian.
I am Winston Watini. I am from Saskatchewan. Knowledge is power. We must gather knowledge to protect our children, our culture, our future. Learn the ways you can protect yourself and others from infection and spreading HIV. Teach others what you have learned. Together, we can make a difference.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, Native women made all decisions regarding their reproductive health care. This was respected as women's business. Today, we are basically denied this decision-making power. It's time to take back that power making decisions concerning our reproductive health. There is a choice we can make regarding unwanted pregnancy. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that must be taken within 72 hours after having unprotected sexual intercourse in order for it to be effective in preventing pregnancy. Contact your local Indian Health Service facility and ask if they carry Plan B. If not, tell them to order it. Plan B is an OTC, over-the-counter contraceptive, and a prescription is not necessary. You have a legal right to access this contraceptive over-the-counter. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Coming up, a last word on Donald Trump, Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, and what Donald Trump doesn't know about Pocahontas. And now tonight's last word, which is Pocahontas. During their centuries of imperialistic rule of Ireland, the English decided they needed a name for the Irish, a slur, something that would serve the purpose of all slurs against all races, ethnicities, and religions, something that would render that group subhuman. That's what those words are meant to do. The N-word is meant to categorize all black people as subhuman, not worthy of human rights. One of the names the English came up with for the Irish was Paddy, an abbreviation of the quintessential Irish name Patrick. And that is the model for Donald Trump's use of the word Pocahontas. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren is from Oklahoma, and she says she has a small fraction of her ancestry that is Native American. And that is apparently all Donald Trump knows about Elizabeth Warren.
Warren, she seems to have made it her job.
Who, Pocahontas? Pocahontas. Well,
is that offensive?
Look, she is
an offensive. Very offensive.
You tell me. Oh, really? Oh, I'm sorry about that. Pocahontas, she is a senator that's highly overrated. She's passed very little legislation. She has been a real disaster for a lot of people, including the Democrats, who frankly can't stand her. I think she's as Native American as I am, okay? That I will tell you. But she's a woman that's been very ineffective, other than she's got a big mouth.
So the candidate with the big mouth doesn't think Elizabeth Warren has Native American ancestry. Donald Trump doesn't like to discuss his own ancestry because, as John Oliver recently revealed, you don't have to go far back to find the name change that gave Donald Trump his current last name.
The very name Trump is the cornerstone of his brand. If only there were a way to uncouple that magical word from the man he really is. Well, guess what? There is. Because it turns out the name Trump was not always his family's name. One biographer found that a prescient ancestor had changed it from, and this is true, Drumpf. Yes, f***ing Drumpf. And Drumpf is much less magical.
One of the many questions that Donald Trump has provoked, but will never be asked of him, is who was Pocahontas? What are the odds of Donald Trump getting that question right? Was Pocahontas a fictional character in a Disney cartoon or a real person? There is no way that Donald Trump knows that Pocahontas was a real person born about 1596, we don't know exactly when, because of course Native American tribes were not issuing birth certificates. She is famous for having befriended the English settlers at Jamestown, Virginia. John Smith wrote a glowing letter to Queen Anne claiming that Pocahontas saved his life when her father was about to have Smith executed. In John Smith's version, Pocahontas laid her head on his head so that Smith could not be beheaded without Pocahontas suffering the same fate. In his letter to the Queen, John Smith said, "She hazarded the beating out of her own brains to save mine, and not only that, but so prevailed with her father that I was safely conducted to Jamestown." In Smith's original account of that dangerous encounter with that tribe, Pocahontas was not mentioned, and so historians doubt the accuracy of his letter to the Queen, but that is the version of Pocahontas that has passed through the centuries and is now the stuff of Disney animation. The reporter that you just heard ask Donald Trump about Elizabeth Warren is Nicole Robertson. She is Native American. Here was her reaction to Donald Trump's use of the word Pocahontas today.
I believe that Mr. Trump and his tone was offensive today. If there was other young indigenous or Native American young girls sitting here, what's that signaling to them as young Native American girls?
What that is signaling to them is that if they work their way through law school and become a Harvard Law School professor, or if they become senators, no matter what they do in their lives, Donald Trump will reduce them to one word. Donald Trump will do everything he can to rob them of all of their accomplishments and reduce them to one word. And in doing that, Donald Trump is following the model set out for him hundreds of years ago by the people who needed to believe that the people they didn't like were subhuman. That everything that could and should be said about them is reducible to one word. Every group knows what that word is for them. The Jews know the one-word labels that anti-Semites use for them. We all know the one-word label that was invented for black people. If some Native American young girls heard Donald Trump use that word today, no one would have to explain to them what he was trying to do with that word. Here's something the most ignorant person who's ever run for president doesn't know about the word he used today. Pocahontas was not her real name. She and her tribe decided to hide her real name from the English settlers. Historian William Stith explained why in his book published in 1865 titled The History of the First Discovery and Settlement of Virginia. William Stith wrote, "Her real name, it seems, was originally Matoax, which the Indians carefully concealed from the English and changed it to Pocahontas out of a superstitious fear lest they, by the knowledge of her true name, should be enabled to do her some hurt." And tonight, 400 years later, the Republican candidate for president is trying to do Elizabeth Warren some hurt by throwing a name at her that was invented by Native Americans to protect a young woman. And that's tonight's last word. Chris Hayes is up next.
When the fear is gone. humanity in the white, white light of the night. And now, what is gonna be black enough to be black enough to see me? Black enough for me. Gonna be.
Hey, this is Jonathan Colton, and you're listening to a podcast released under a Creative Commons license. CC, baby. Check it out.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Is for everybody, not just for the few. Anyone can share ED with someone nice as you. ED is for everybody, darling.
If you're curious or confused, get information or a pamphlet at most pharmacies or a health clinic. If you need help, see a doctor.
I am absolutely convinced that this nation is finally headed in the right direction. Our economy is growing again. We are adding jobs again. America's moving forward again.
President Obama wants $50 billion to create jobs for construction of roads, railways, and runways. Already, billions have been committed in new initiatives such as Social Innovation Fund, economic stimulus, and broadband. And hundreds of millions are going to border security. Yet, security and jobs for whom? Construction jobs mostly employ men. The new funding initiatives have principally benefited institutions and government. And border security seems to be for U.S. transnationals operating maquilas and those seeking to profit from the violence and poverty in Ciudad Juarez and Mexico. But what about security and jobs for women workers on the U.S.-Mexico border? Why invest in infrastructure benefiting transnational corporations and not in community-led development? For nearly two decades, first with NAFTA and now with the war on drugs, border women have seen their livelihoods, communities, and futures written off as unfortunate but necessary casualties by the companies they made rich, left to live and die amidst the underdevelopment of the border. Yet, women have refused to accept this fate. Organized, fierce, and resilient, They're pursuing their own version of security and employment. La Mujer Obrera in El Paso is one example. Through their daycare, restaurant, festival marketplace, museum, media center, and adult education programs, the women are creating genuine border security, real economic development. And they have extensive plans for additional development, including schools, housing, and health programs. Like La Mujer Obrera, there are other low-income women on the border who have the vision and drive needed to create spaces where cultural arts and grassroots microenterprises can flourish, restoring economy, pride, and dignity in their neighborhoods. Their efforts are the stuff that economists, feminists, and reformers tout as vital to build sustainable national security and development. Yet today, the women find themselves fighting their hardest battle yet, sustainability in the weakest U.S. economy in decades, and a future being designed without them. Local and national media have focused on border violence and security issues, but have missed the solutions that border women are ready to implement. Public-private initiatives need to prioritize border women's efforts to restore their communities from the damaging effects of international trade policies. As Gloria Steinem said when she visited La Mujer Obrera, there is no safe space for women. We have to create that space. We have to build that community. The conditions of women on the border are urgent, and women on the border are demanding justice and equity now. For more information, contact La Mujer Obrera.
I would like anyone who is listening to consider some thoughts that I paraphrase from the words of German pastor Martin Niemöller. You might not care if Donald Trump says Muslims must register with their government because you're not one. And you might not care if Donald Trump says he's going to round up all the Hispanic immigrants because you're not one. And you might not care if Donald Trump says it's okay to rough up black protesters because you're not one. And you might not care if Donald Trump wants to suppress journalists because you're not one. But think about this. If he keeps going and he actually becomes president, he might just get around to you. And you better hope that there's someone left to help you.
Society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
Hey, what do you think about this idea? Since we freed the slaves in 1865, don't you think the black race owes the white race reparations? I was thinking like $20,000, you know, per person. I mean, anybody that's not on welfare.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery. White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
Hey, what do you think about this idea? Since we freed the slaves in 1865, don't you think the black race owes the white race reparations? I was thinking like $20,000... you know, per person. I mean, anybody that's not on welfare.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Hello, and welcome to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Grapevine on 3KND. I'm Annelle Creed. This week's program, we talk about Aboriginal identity and racism based on the colour of your skin. Racism in Australia affects many people, but within our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, racism exists because of ignorance and a misunderstanding of Aboriginal culture. Auntie Pat Warrior from South Australia said she not only experienced racism as a child, but also as an adult in her working life.
I'm from South Australia and I'm a Ngadjeri woman. My people have come from the mid-north of South Australia, which is, includes Burra, Jamestown and all that mid-north area of South Australia. Racism in Australia is fairly wide, and we've always copped the brunt of it, us Aboriginal people. I guess a little bit at school, you know, kids didn't want to mix with us in school. But mostly I got my, I was discriminated because of my colour when I got older. The usual stuff like going into shops, waiting for about 10, 15 minutes and other white people or other people of other colour would step in and the grocery shop owner would talk to them before they got to me. But also recently when I previously worked with Aboriginal offenders, and I would go into the jails with a white worker, and the prison officers and that would talk to the white worker and would address her and wouldn't address me as a client service worker.
You know, most of Australia don't seem to think that they are actually racist.
I think they need to open their eyes a bit. I think they are blinded by the fact that they say that they aren't. They actually are. I'd just like to show you some ways that I think that they are. Like, for instance, in South Australia, when the Aboriginal Community Centre wanted to open a education college down at Largs Bay, there was a petition within that Largs Bay community for them not to put the black people into that and that college there because it would take down the properties of their area. So I actually think that's a bit racist on their part to in this day and age, to develop petitions within a local area to say that the Aboriginal people will bring down property values. Otherwise, is now we look at this whole issue about the boat people coming to Australia. The majority of those people who come are Muslims, and so there is a big stink about those boat people coming to Australia, taking up our jobs, getting paid, getting houses, start-up money, and so a general population of Australia gets offensive about that. And that's because they're Muslims, I think. And so that's another thing, that's a comment about a person's race.
That's right.
Not because they don't have skills, because they're of another race. In the early days of Australia history, they brought the white Australian policy in, and the white people of this country forgot that they've got Aboriginal people who live in this country, the First Nations people, and didn't even consider that we were of colour. You know, the things that happen today about people's heritage or their identity is still questioned by the wider community. When they say that they're not racist, I don't believe that they are. That they're not. I think that I'd like to think that a majority of our wider community aren't racist, but when you go out as an Aboriginal person to different places and refused service or refused to be served in line and made to wait or to be talked about as being Indigenous is another word for me as a racist attitude.
Auntie Pat Warrior-Reed from South Australia. You're tuned in to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Grapevine on 3KND. Many non-Indigenous people have this stereotypical view of Aboriginal people, that to be Aboriginal means you must have dark skin, be poor and live in the bush, or have problems with alcohol or substances. Auntie Joy Murphy from Melbourne said that many people have no understanding of the real history of Australia and that we are now educators of our own history because it has been misrepresented by mainstream Australia.
I'm Auntie Joy Wanda Murphy and I'm the senior elder of the Wurundjeri people here in Melbourne and surrounds. You know, it's Manel, it's a really... it can be such a shocking experience to be told that you're not who you are. Sometimes it just really knocks us back and makes us feel so unworthy. I think we have to be, at the same time while we're shocked and hurt and almost stripped of our belonging, I think then we need to take a breath and say, okay, so now we have to educate these fellas. And That's what I really like about the hard basket of who we are. So just saying that, for instance, you know, when I've been called a Greek or an Italian, which is okay.
I've actually been called that myself too.
Yeah. Even my own cousin, I was walking around with sunglasses and a hat on, and she said, you know, I walked up to her and said hello, and she said, oh, look out, I thought you was an Italian woman. And I said, what, the way I'm dressed or what? And she said, I don't know.
I've actually, because of my background, we've got Chinese and Malaysian blood and Spanish blood from the 1800s. And my hair's red at the moment, but normally it's, you know, a really dark brown and it looks black. And it's, of course, it's perfectly straight. And I've got yellow skin, as they call it.
Yeah.
And so I've been called Asian. And then I've been called Greek as well, because, you know, the dark, my skin is I say golden. You know, that's what I say, because I like that color.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that I've been called not Aboriginal.
That's what I really like about the hard basket of who we are. So just saying that, for instance, you know, when I've been called a Greek or an Italian, which is okay.
I've actually been called that myself too.
Yeah. Even my own cousin, I was walking around with sunglasses and a hat on, and she said, you know, I walked up to her and said hello, and she said, oh, look out, I thought you was an Italian woman. And I said, what, the way I'm dressed or what? And she said, I don't know.
I've actually, because of my background, we've got Chinese and Malaysian blood and Spanish blood from the 1800s. And my hair's red at the moment, but normally it's, you know, a really dark brown and it looks black. And it's, of course, it's perfectly straight. And I've got yellow skin, as they call it.
Yeah.
And so I've been called Asian. And then I've been called Greek as well, because, you know, the dark, my skin is I say golden. You know, that's what I say, because I like that color.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that I've been called not Aboriginal based on how I look, and this stereotypical attitude of mainstream Australia of who is and who isn't Aboriginal. You know, I think that we need to start making changes.
You know, Manel, that's where it comes back to education. Because, you know, Westerners or any other people, you know, they don't really know much about us. And I think, you know, it's very little information that they base their whatever they say, you know. And for me, I think it's about us saying to them, you know, reminding them of the history of this country, and that, you know, of course we're not all black-skinned, because just, what is it, 160-odd years ago, you know, when settlers came here and from all races of the world then came here, and, you know, unfortunately, that's why we have the change of colours. And the sad part about it is that in those early times, you know, lots of our young girls were taken hostage and made slaves and were raped, you know. So then, you know, we had this hideous situation where, you know, a child was born, and where either the poor mum, if she was too young, the government took her child away, or the father of the child, be he a white man or any other race, didn't own up to this child. So you've got this poor child who really doesn't know their own background. And unfortunately, a lot of our community that I find a few years ago, you know, were still trying to find out their identity. So, you know, it is wrong. It's terribly wrong. So disgustingly wrong for people to base who you are on what you look like. And, you know, I don't mind having a challenging question. I think that's good. But so long as people understand and respect, you know, what we're trying to tell them.
Auntie Joy Murphy from Melbourne. You're listening to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Grapevine on 3KND. Racism also exists within the music industry. I spoke with Aboriginal entertainer Kutcher Edwards.
My mob are the Muffy Muffy people from, I was born in a place called Balranald, which is on the Murrumbidgee River, about 150 k's north of Swan Hill, New South Wales.
All right, and I did read a little bit of your background there, and you were taken away as a child as well too.
Yeah, I was taken in 1967, born in 65, so... Yeah, I was born prior to the referendum in 67, and of course, therefore, born not a citizen of this country, so... You can see probably why I don't celebrate Australia Day as such, but I celebrate the fact that Survival Day.
One of the things that I wanted to talk about was racism, and you know it still exists in this country, and that you know the majority of mainstream Australia don't even realise that they are racist.
I would suggest, you know, even within the Australian music industry, that there's hidden racism is running rampant in my eyes. This is just an observation from an Aboriginal person who's been in the industry for 25 years. But how many Indigenous performers have ever made it to sell a number one record? You can probably name them. Uncle Jimmy Little came out, actually, he was the first person in Australia to have a gold record was Royal Telephone, and which I saw was actually sitting in the foyer of 3K&D. But
it is, yes.
The reality is that there's not been many since Uncle Jimmy, you know. Yothi Indy, I suppose, Christine Arnoux. Jessica Melville is doing it now, but...
It's interesting that you say that, because earlier last year when Dan Sultan won the male...
Dan Sultan...
Classic example.
Male artist in the Arias.
Yeah, and there was hardly any... You know, I looked at the news the next day, especially TV news, and they weren't talking about him, they were talking about Washington.
Yeah, exactly. So... But the reality is that when you go into a record store and you ask for an Indigenous Australian's or a blackfella's album, we're hidden away in world music.
Wow, I wouldn't have even thought about that.
Why is that? What is more Australian than an Aboriginal person singing our songline?
Here in our own country.
That really eats away at me, you know. There's all the and to be honest, there's all these genres in Australia, and that's beautiful that Dan has received what he's received, but the reality is that there's no Indigenous component in the Arias anyway.
Aboriginal entertainer Kutcher Edwards. You're listening to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Grapevine on 3KND. Aboriginal actor Stephen Bamba Albert, who starred in Brand New Day and Corrugation Road and is currently the chairman of Galari Media in Broome, says racism exists in many different forms.
My name is Stephen Albert. My nickname is Bamba. My traditional name is Angage. And my group is Bunny on Limonburg, but we're also part of the Bar Tribe. That's up in Mila. In the Broome area, Glary region, which is the Broome region.
I was talking to you earlier that this week our program is on racism, and racism based on the colour of our skin and how some of us don't look like traditional Aboriginal people.
It's hard for people to put it this way. I think most people are either arrogant or ignorant of Aboriginal people. Firstly, they get stories secondhand and or otherwise they've been conditioned to dislike black people, or Aboriginal people especially. I think as you travel, you find different sorts of racism. Some are very subtle, and some are very straight out, you know, rednecks. But you don't only get racism from white people, you also get racism from other black people as well.
That was one of the things that I was talking about with another auntie from here in Melbourne about before.
You get all these other black people come from other countries, for instance. You know, they think they're better than us as well.
From overseas, you mean?
Yeah, they also have a go at us as well. But the other thing is that I think because of recent times, with all our other leaders that have fought against racism and all that over the years we've, within ourselves, Aboriginal people accepted ourselves, you know, like we call ourselves Aboriginal and Islanders now, or Indigenous people. Whereas before, they used to be split amongst ourselves, but we have come together. And because of the referendum, we seem to be coming more. And because I think native title sort of changes us a bit too as well. Like you get traditional people and non-traditional people.
That's right.
Sometimes having the people themselves have to decide within themselves how they feel. And I know that I've got a lot of friends who are Kuris. I've got a lot of friends who are Maoris and Nungas and Ilden. And the internet comes from all sorts of shades of colors. Even in my own family, I'm sort of black as the ace of spades, but when I look at my great-grandkids, they're white ass.
That's it, yep. I mean, we've got redheads and blue eyes in our family, so, you know.
Yep. So what I try to do is try to encourage all my kids and everybody else is who they are, what they are. They need to have their identity. And because when they have their identity, they can front up with anybody. Because you have to realize a lot of non-Aboriginal people, they don't know who they are. And probably they use this as an excuse to have a go at somebody else. And by what I mean by subtle racism, and people could talk to you and smile at you and laugh at you and be good with you. But when they go around the corner, they probably criticize you out to the hell. I think we work harder. Indigenous people, Aboriginal people work harder at being at good to promote ourselves. And sometimes I think non-Indigenous people, they can either take it or sometimes they get a bit envious. So in different forms, you find racism. Like here up in Broome area, we mostly related to all the Asian mob, you know?
Yeah.
Like a lot of my relations, they're either part Chinese, Japanese, Kupang, Malay, you know, and we also got Europeans, you know, some of them are part German, Italian, Lebanese. You know, so, like in Broome, if you come to Broome, we got a saying here, you stay in Broome long enough, you don't have to see the world. The world comes to you.
That's a lovely saying.
And that's why if you look at the grandma here in town in Broome, we're sort of worldly people, and we all have different names. You know, we got European names, we got Asian names, we got Aboriginal names, Indigenous names. Like with myself, my stepfather was a Japanese pearl diver, and I've got a Japanese name myself, Masando. And we, in Broome, I think we were exposed to different racial cultures and all that sort of stuff a very long time ago. And so we were able to tolerate with other people. But I think when you look at, when you hear stories about Kamaraganja and you hear stories about other places, you know, like when I've done a lot of traveling, I've been to places like Yarraba and Sherbourg, but I've had friends who come from there and how we had to tackle racism and all that. I know racism is always going to be there. It's what you do about it. It's what Indigenous people like yourself now, just only hearing you, you're very strong with your identity.
Yep, I love my people, you know, yeah. And I think that's what makes me strong.
I can hear it in your voice. I can feel it, even though I'm miles away from you. I don't even know you. I don't even see you. But I can feel it in your voice. You know, I can feel it, Leon. When we say Leon, oh, yeah, Leon is meaning your inner feelings.
Yep.
And your spiritual feelings, or it's like karma. I can feel that you're very solid with your identity.
Thanks.
But you do come across racism. I can remember when I was a kid going to school in Perth and jumping on the bus, and little kids would say, oh, look at that dirty man, or whatever. And what happened to me and my mates before, when the kids would look at us, we'd sort of wink at them before they could say anything, and they'd say, I'm from China. We didn't know what you were going to China meant anyway, but it stopped them from calling us dirty old men.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
But the thing is, in some places, racism is so blatant, and it comes in all forms. You know, it can come by a judge, it can be a policeman, you know, and it could be anybody. In their own form, that they have a go at you. You might go for an interview for a job. you know, the interviewee might be racist bloke, and maybe that's why you don't get the job. You don't know. In Broome, we seem to be able to overcome a lot of this because when I was born, we used to outnumber the whites, you know, at 10 to 1 or something. And I grew up in a very solid brown background. Even though we had the same old policies like the White Australia policy and all of that, and going through the referendum and going through that and, you know, and all the other policies that made for us, like the government made policies for us.
Uncle Bumba from Galari Media in Broome. You're listening to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Grapevine on 3KND. Lionel Bamblett, the General Manager of the Victorian Aboriginal Education Association, says that we need to break down the barriers of racism for our children.
Well, it's actually starting to become a real issue, actually, the thing of identity. When you actually look at the dispersal rate of Aboriginal people, the majority of Aboriginal people in this country actually live in cities and major centres. They don't live on country, by what people perceive to be country, and that's out in remote areas. When you consider that this country now called Australia is all Aboriginal land, then if you live in an urban setting, you're still living on country in a sense. But the majority of Aboriginal people in this country, Aboriginal and Islander people in this country now called Australia, live in capital cities. And major centres. They don't live in remote areas. They live there. It's not about the colour of your skin. It's about who you are, and it's about your acceptance by your community and within your community, and that's right. That's who we are. And Aboriginal people live in a very dispersed situation in this state in Victoria. And I think there's some figures that have been quoted that I think it's 60% or something like that of Aboriginal people in Victoria are in a relationship with a non-Aboriginal person. So their children are decidedly in the future going to be fair. But they're still recognised, and they recognise themselves, and we recognise ourselves as Aboriginal people. So I don't see the problem and the issue with in and around that. And it's something that I think we, as Koori people in the state of Victoria, need to look at and start addressing.
You know, when you look at some of our stolen generation who have been removed, you know, and they might have had one white parent, a white father or a white mother.
Yeah.
And in actual fact, you know, they've come out and been born as a white skin baby. And, you know, and then the struggles that they have, not only to identify as an Aboriginal person, but, you know, to be seen from...
As an Aboriginal person.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I mean, there's that young lady that was working for something, some group, I think, in Canberra just recently, and she wasn't typical Aboriginal looking to be... the front person on a sales thing or something like
that. I think that was Generation One.
Generation One, yeah. Well, how insulting is that? And then, I mean, she grew up Aboriginal. She's always been accepted as an Aboriginal person. And her family all grew up Aboriginal and accepted as Aboriginal people. And because they don't have that stereotypical look about them, then they can be judged not to be suitable to hold those type of positions. That's stupid.
Yeah, I don't think that mainstream Australia realises, you know.
And that's right. Look, people, when you live in the majority of us live in as I said before, Aboriginal people live in capital cities. But then again, you ask most non-Aboriginal people, an Aboriginal person that they know, and they'll say, oh, Cathy Freeman, she was in the Olympics, or someone who plays football, or someone like that, someone who's readily identified in that sense. Not that little kid that's over in their classroom, or kids or people walking around the suburbs where they live. And what we've got to do is start breaking down those barriers and those stereotypes so that we can actually our kids can be offered
and supported to achieve how they want to achieve, but also being comfortable within their own identity, comfortable about who they are and in their own Aboriginality. Right? And that's what we've got to look at doing.
Lionel Bamblett, General Manager of the Victorian Aboriginal Education Association. You're listening to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Grapevine on 3KND. The issue of Aboriginal identity has been in the news recently, and Herald Sun columnist Andrew Bolt is being sued under the Racial Vilification Act by a group of Aborigines over a blog he wrote last year titled White is the New Black. He was suggesting that light-skinned Aboriginal people are the new fashion in academia, the arts and professional activism. I spoke to Dr. Mark Rose, who said that mainstream media has an influence on the Australian psyche in regards to racism towards Aboriginal people, and that Australia as a society is unaware of the richness of the cultural heritage of this country.
You know, these gods of talkback radio, you know, they sort of have a bit of an influence, but they just, you know, they reflect that the underbelly of the Australian psyche, and it's pretty sad, you know. It's pretty sad. I saw a bit of other media today, you know, that criticises Aboriginal programs. So this is from an institute from up in Queensland, I believe, and it's sort of, you know, the right wing that, you know, their thought is predicated on that equity is treating everyone the same. Well, not everyone is the same, so equity should be treating everyone not the same to create a level playing field. So it's really hard to expect Aboriginal people have been locked out of the real economy, locked out of the political system, you know, only allowed to go to school for, you know, so many years in living memory, kids stolen, and to expect that it's not going to take a whole range of measures to return us to equal footing in the community. So if we pump into the logic of the right-wing gods of talkback, well, equity is treating everyone the same. Well, sorry, that logic is tortured and flawed because everyone is not the same. If they apply that logic to, you know, some of the natural disasters we had recently, well, it would be un-Australian, and equally the logic of treating everyone the same is really un-Australian, you know. It's either we're a compassionate country, which I believe we are, or we a country of haves and have-nots, which we should not be. But that's the insidious nature of racism, and racism feeds off ignorance, and that's why we come back to where we started, you know, that, you know, if the rich asset of, you know, the cultural heritage of this country was more prevalent in schools, then people, I think, we would have a better society. You know, we'd have a more compassionate and understanding society. And I think, you know, this country would be grown rather than held back, which I think it is many times, by that those attitudes that are very adolescent, you know. It's watching what everyone gets rather than rejoicing in the success of the whole.
One of the questions that I've sort of asked most of the people that I've talked with in the last day or two is, how do they define personally their Aboriginality? How do they define, you know, being Aboriginal? For people that don't understand what it means to be Aboriginal.
To me, it's power of the community, you know, and it's measured in a whole lot of ways. Walking through a shopping centre. I used to run the Aboriginal school, the Code School in Glenroy, and the other day I saw some former students and ran up and sort of, you know, talking about what they're doing now. The link that we have into, you know, the essence of this country that, you know, goes back 40,000, 50,000 years, that, you know, the feeling when you go home to country and you're on country and how it sort of recharges your batteries and strengthens you. That's the essence of being Aboriginal, you know. And to see little kids and to work with elders, you know, and to listen to elders and just to rejoice in the in any extreme talent that we have, and the sense of community and the compassion of us as a people, it means the world to me.
Dr. Mark Rose, you've been listening to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Grapevine. I'm Manel.
You can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African-American. If you start to, you know, delve around the edges, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year? Whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African-American.
Yeah, I was driving in today, and I was seeing, because I saw this the piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck, it's What's for Demagogue. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on RadioNetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at headonradionetwork.com. There's a listen live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on RadioNetwork.com.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying, for Men in Hip Hop. Really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about, it shouldn't be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. And it's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Let me ask a very simple question. Does it concern you that the government is spying on you? 30 years ago, to even ask this question would have been a scandal. If you lived through Watergate, if you read the Church Committee reports, you know the costs of unchecked government surveillance. The government is exploiting our amnesia. We did not pass the Fourth Amendment in order to protect those with something to hide. We passed that amendment, which prohibits general warrants or limitless surveillance, because we know all too well the cost of an unaccountable government. The question is not, do you have something to hide? The question is whether we control government or the government controls us. Remember, this struggle is part of who we are as a people. This country was born in rebellion because the British government was exerting too much control over American lives. We broke free and began to create a system of government meant to protect liberty. Our national history reveals a constant struggle to stay true to this value. You face one of those moments of struggle right now. Recent leaks have given us a glimpse into our government's gigantic surveillance machine. It's a machine that is eating our freedom. If this concerns you, and it should, you need to contact your representatives in Congress now. Ask them to end the tracking of Americans' domestic communications. I won't stand idly by while our civil liberties are eaten by the NSA's surveillance machine. You shouldn't either.
This is an international call out to the world. We are asking everybody worldwide to do whatever you can do. And what needs to be done is you need to go to the streets. And you need to protest. You need to do whatever you can to help us, to protect us. Take action where you are. Take railroads. Take bridges. Do it. Take strong hearts. Anybody who's fighting resource extraction, have a strong heart. And do it. Stand up for your rights. They cannot stop us all. Worldwide, this is your call. Resistance, warriors, they're harming your territory. Stop them.
The wind comes in four corners, four directions, four colors. And death rides on four horsemen. A black snake with some black tank. How much money do these companies need to make?
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
It's our news back.
Good evening. Come in, won't you? Why, what's the matter? You seem a bit nervous. Perhaps the cemetery outside this house has upset you. But there are things far worse than cemeteries. For instance, an hypnotic force which drives a person to murder, as in the story I want to tell you tonight. A story I call The Knife of Death. My story, The Knife of Death, begins several years ago in the city of London. All London is blacked out, waiting for the nightly visit of German bombers. Henry Hawkins, an air raid warden, slowly makes his way through a street filled with wreckage with the aid of a blackout lantern. As Big Ben strikes the hour, Hawkins stops and listens.
Is that you, Albert?
Yes. None other, Henry, my lad. 10 o'clock and I'm here to relieve you. Look at this street, will you? Pretty mess them Jerry's made of it last night.
Aye, he's hardly outstanding. Well, I'd best be getting on home, Albert, before the missus begins worrying.
I'll walk a bit of the way with you, Henry.
Thanks, Albert.
Yeah, you mind the wreckage now, Henry? Oh. This lantern ain't much, but without it, we'd break our necks.
Half a minute, Albert. Shine your light this way, will you?
Aye, what's up?
I kicked something that was...
Here it is.
Blimey, it's a knife.
Aye.
Wait till I clean it up a bit.
Henry, look. The handle of that knife. Why, it's blood red.
Aye. The handle seems to be carved out of some kind of stone. Looks like ruby to me.
Now, does it that? Look at the way it gleams and glitters, Henry. I've never seen anything like it.
Nor have I. The handle looks like a pool of blood. And when you hold the lantern close to it, the fire of the stone seems to go right through you.
Henry, what's come over you? Come off it, will you?
Fire of the stone. Makes me feel all warm inside and strong.
It does, eh? Let me hold it a bit, Henry.
Now,
just a minute, Henry. Half of that knife is mine. I helped you find it, didn't I?
Stop reaching for it. It's mine, I tell you.
Half of that knife is mine. I got a right to hold it. Now, give it here.
Try to take it from me, would you? Well, take this,
Henry. Don't.
What? What have I done? Albert, speak to me. I didn't mean to stab you, Albert. You're dead. I've murdered him. If they catch me, they'll hang me for this. I've got to get out of here.
Is that you, Henry?
Yes.
Where you been? It's 12:30.
I stopped at the corner pub.
Henry, you've been drinking.
Well, what if I have? The man has a few drinks and yet as though he's murdered someone. Well, I got a right to take a few drinks.
Stop shouting, Henry. I'm not deaf. Here, I'll hang up your coat for you.
I can hang it up myself.
What fell out of... Why, it's a knife. Henry, what are you doing with a knife?
I found it. Here, let it alone. It's mine.
Why, there's fresh blood all over the blade.
Oh, look, Millie. It's just the color of the ruby handle.
Henry, how did blood get on that blade?
It glows and glitters like it was alive. It makes me feel all warm inside. Warm and strong.
Henry, you frighten me when you talk like that. You'd best give me that knife.
No, take it anyway. It's mine.
Henry, you're drunk. Now give it here. Give it here, I say.
No, I'll give it to you. Like this.
Henry, you stabbed me.
What have I done? Millie, speak to me. Oh, I didn't mean to do it, love. This knife, this cursed knife that made me do it. Oh, Millie, what have I done?
Poor Millie. Poor Henry. What's going to happen, Dr. Weird?
Well, I'll tell you. Can you keep something under your hat?
Somehow, Doctor, you remind me of something I was going to say, if you'll pardon the brief interruption. Under more and more hats these days, right inside, you'll find the familiar Adam crest of quality. It's no coincidence that these Adam hats are worn by well-dressed men. Men who know quality instinctively recognize the genuine superiority of an Adam in the fine fur felt, the expert craftsmanship, and the correct style. What's more, Adam hats come in a wide choice of styles and colors and shapes. Triple assurance that you'll get the hat that's right for you. Next time you go stepping out, wear an Adam. People will notice the difference. Now let's step into the Hawkins house again. Dr. Weir.
And now to continue my story, the knife of death. The neighbors, hearing Mrs. Hawkins cry out as she was stabbed, called Corporal Mason, a bobby who was on duty nearby. When Mason entered the Hawkins house, he found Henry sitting in a chair, his face buried in his hands. Mrs. Hawkins was dead, the murder weapon on the floor beside the body. Corporal Mason notified Scotland Yard, and 20 minutes later, there was a knock on the door.
Here we are, Hawkins. I'll answer the door.
Oh, good evening, Corporal.
Good evening, sir.
I'm Inspector King of Scotland Yard. This is Sergeant Roberts.
How do you do, sir?
Good evening. Nasty mess. Nothing's been touched?
No, sir.
I presume this is the dead woman's husband?
Yes, sir. Henry Hawkins, his name is.
Now then, Hawkins, I must ask you a few questions. I warn you, however, that anything you may say may be used in court against you. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Very well. Hawkins, you confess to the murder of your wife?
Yes. I killed her. But it wasn't my fault. The knife, it drove me to it.
The knife drove you to it? I'm afraid I don't understand.
It not. With its cursed blood-red handle. It made me do it.
It is a most unusual-looking knife with that blood-red handle. Strange.
What is there?
In some report or other in our files, I recall reading something about a knife with a blood-red handle. Now, where did I read that? Oh, well, never mind. Hawkins, where did you get that knife?
While I was coming off air raid duty tonight, I stumbled on it. It's a wreckage.
Eh? Where was this?
Miller Court, sir, right off Dorset Street.
Miller's Court? Miller's Court, you say?
Yes, sir.
By Jove, now I remember where I read about the knife with the blood-red handle.
Really, sir?
Yes. It was in the file of Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper?
Yes. In 1886, Jack the Ripper attacked a woman near Hanbury Street. The victim was found dying, but before she died, she muttered a few words about being stabbed by a knife with a handle red as blood.
Surely, sir, you don't think there's any connection between Jack the Ripper's knife and that one lying there on the floor?
Now, there's more to my story, Mason. Do you remember the name of Jack the Ripper's last victim?
Why, yes, it was Marie Kelly. She was murdered in November 1888.
Quite right, Corporal. Do you remember where her body was found?
Why, no, sir, Corporal, yes, I do.
Her body was found in Miller's Court, right off Dorset Street.
Miller's Court? Why, that's where Hawkins said he found the knife that's lying there on the floor.
Exactly.
You tried to tell us, Inspector, that the knife Hawkins found belonged to Jack the Ripper. Or that it's been lying in the street these past 50 years.
No, no, no. Not lying in the street, Corporal. What if, after Jack the Ripper had murdered Marie Kelly, he'd lost the knife at the scene of the crime? Say, for example, it dropped into a drain and the bombs that fell in Miller's Court last night turned it up again.
Oh, come now, sir. Why, next you'll be saying that Hawkins is right, that there is something about that knife that drives people to commit murder with it.
There is, I tell you. There is. When you hold it in your hand, it seems to come alive. Drives you against your will to kill.
Are you daft?
No, meaning, of course, that you think I'm daft, too?
Oh, no, sir. I didn't mean that, sir.
I'll admit it's rather a wild theory. But what if it were true? Don't you see that might account for Marie Kelly being the Ripper's last victim? Once he lost the knife, he was no longer driven to murder.
But, sir, you don't really believe that knife had an evil force behind it, do you?
No, no, I suppose not, and yet, well, it's an interesting theory.
Oh, yes, sir, yes, sir, quite.
Yes, sir, quite. Sergeant Roberts.
Yes, sir.
You remain here with Corporal Mason while I take the prisoner to Scotland Yard.
Yes, sir.
Nothing's to be touched, mind you. I'll send the technical staff over at once.
Very good, sir.
All right, come along, Hawkins.
Yes, sir.
Say, Sergeant, isn't it about time to be retired, the Inspector? He acts a bit balmy.
Yeah, have a little more respect there.
Oh, come off it. Even you've got to admit the old man sounds balmy. Imagine, sir, that the knife there on the floor once belonged to Jack the Ripper. And there's an evil force behind it.
The old man's always getting queer ideas.
Well, that's just about the queerest I ever heard. Yeah, it's an unusual knife, all right, with that blood-red handle, but evil force behind it.
Here now, don't you go picking it up.
Take it easy, will you? I'm using a handkerchief to pick it up, ain't I? Just want to take a closer look at it.
You heard what the inspector said. Nothing was to be touched.
You know, the handle does seem to sort of glitter and glow. It makes you feel warm inside.
Now you've done it. You put your hand all round the handle and spoil the fingerprints.
Feels good to hold it like this.
Mason, as your superior, I order you to put that knife down. Put it down, do you hear?
Makes you feel strong.
Yeah, give me that knife.
It's mine. Keep away.
You daft. Give it to me.
Stay away from me.
I'll teach you to disobey an order. You'll hand it over or I'll...
Let the thing you from me, would you? All right, take it.
He's dead. I killed him. This bloody knife. It drove me to kill him. I didn't want to do it, but it made me. Inspector, he must have been right. It's the knife. It is the knife of Jack the Ripper.
Too bad about poor Mason, wasn't it? But as everyone knows, a knife is a dangerous thing to play with. Particularly a knife with a blood-red handle that glows and glitters with a hypnotic force. What happened to it? It's under lock and key at Scotland Yard. And strangely enough, when Henry Hawkins and Corporal Mason were tried for murder, a death weapon wasn't offered in evidence. Inspector King was afraid to have anyone handle it. Oh, by the way, if you should ever come across a knife with a blood-red ruby handle, oh, you have to go. Perhaps you'll drop in on me again soon. Just look for the house on the other side of the cemetery. The house of Dr. Weir.
Let
Celebrating diversity. This is Bristol's BCFM 93.2.
Bob was on his way to work just after dropping the two boys off at a private high school, I believe, in Nairobi. He was on the way to the embassy. And he was broadsided at a stoplight at 60 miles an hour by a reinforced Land Rover. He was killed instantly. The Brit that supposedly was drunk at 7 in the morning was taken to the hospital and immediately disappears. And all the evidence he had given in the way of documentation was proven to be phony as to who he was, and Bob was killed. And it was a hit. And it's always concerned me today that he had gotten a little too close to who had been involved with Siemens implantable chip technology. We'd been trying to, for a couple of years then, quietly trying to find out who had been doing it without our government realizing it was going on. Because whoever it is has got total ability to penetrate anytime, anywhere, our government, instantly.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. State-sponsored child sexual abuse. The course of justice is perverted at the VI paedophile inquiry, but will heads roll? Whatever happened to Lowell Goddard, the third chair of the VI paedophile inquiry, went back home to New Zealand last month, and just as she was about to appear at the Home Affairs Select Committee, Keith Vaz was sacked. No doubt she left after having signed a confidentiality agreement, so survivors of sexual abuse are left wondering why. And leaks suggest it's because she wasn't happy with her staff. Well, the inquiry's number one lawyer, Ben Emerson, has been suspended and now has resigned as well. The new chair, Alexis Jay, is not saying anything about it. So why was the head of the inquiry forced to employ Home Office staff who were themselves under suspicion over the child sex abuse cover-up? Is this all part of a government and civil service attempt to derail the inquiry, which could expose leading figures in government, civil service, children's charities like the NSPCC even, the church, the BBC and even royalty to prosecution? Also, today's funeral of Shimon Peres, the Israeli Prime Minister. We remember this show's fleeting encounter with him, wanting access all areas to the in the run-up to the 2012 London Olympics, and access after the ousting of G4S that he was denied. Also, a commander of the al-Nusra Front in Syria, now known as the Sham Liberation Front, he admits to being supported by the Pentagon. So why haven't we been told that on the news? Finally, we break the taboo of religion and politics. Which god do many rich and powerful people worship, if any? Our sister show Dialect is back at noon every Tuesday now. This week, author of Swallow This, The Dark Secrets of the Food Industry, with author Joanna Blythman. That's Dialect at noon next Tuesday, or download it now from dialectradio.co.uk. First, I'm joined on the line by child sex abuse survivor Sam Hill. Hi, Sam. Welcome to the Politics Show.
Hi, Tony. Hi.
First of all, what's your reaction to the news this week that that Ben Emerson, the leading lawyer in the inquiry, has first of all suspended and then he's decided to resign?
Well, there's not much transparency regarding what really is going on, but I've spoken to a few survivors, Esther Baker, and a few people I know, and they're quite glad to see him go. They didn't think he was really good for the job.
But he's been there for the last 2 years doing this, and we've seen a whole succession of various chairs of this inquiry disappearing, really, as they're appointed. We've had, first of all, Baroness Butler Schloss and Fiona Wolf, both of who were connected to Leon Britton and the era where Leon Britton, former Home Secretary, was supposed to have covered this up back in the 1980s. And then there was Lowell Goddard. She was removed as well. She's now back in New Zealand, but nobody's really quite sure why she left. And now we've got this person, Alexis J. Yeah. So, I mean, I said at the top of the hour just there about whether there's you think this is being derailed deliberately. Do you think there's any chance that this will succeed, this inquiry?
Well, eventually, people keep dropping out. One or two of the bad ones will go, and perhaps, you know, something more will develop, something better. Because, you know, maybe he was the problem, and maybe we'll actually have somebody who'll stick with the job now.
Well, what's your own thoughts about this whole thing, which was floated really at the time that Alexis J. Sorry, was appointed and Lowell Goddard left, which is the idea